This is the John Murphy Show on Buffalo Bills Radio.
McCoy at the 10, at the 5, into the end zone. Touchdown! What a great run! Fires down the middle. It is intercepted by Micah Hyde. Intercepted! Tre Day! Tre'Davious White! He's in trouble. He is sacked. Jordan Poyer came unblocked. It is Jerry Hughes who brings him down. What a big play there! Boy, touch to the right. Outrunning everybody. 10, 5, touchdown! Touchdown! Touchdown, Buffalo!
Live from One Bills Drive, this is the John Murphy Show, presented by Napa Auto Parts.
Start of a new week. Here we go. Here we are. Good afternoon. John Murphy, Donald Jones in our One Buffalo studio. Good afternoon, everybody. Happy Monday. Happy new week. Donald, good to see you. Happy new week to you.
Yeah.
Coming off the big weekend, couple of days off, and a milestone weekend for Donald Jones, ladies and gentlemen. Mr. Anti-Weather, Mr. I Hate Buffalo Winter, decided to dive into the weather with both feet, both skis.
Right.
Tell me about it, man. You went skiing for the first time.
I went skiing. I went out to Ellicottville and had a good time. Stayed at some villas out there. They were beautiful. It was really nice. And then, obviously, we went up to Holiday Valley and did some skiing. And I had to learn. It was my first time skiing, so I had to learn. And really, by the grace of God, to be honest with you, it was like this dude just appeared out of nowhere. Because I was about to just go try it. And I was nervous. And I was about to go. And then this dude, he just came out of nowhere. He worked there. And he was like, "You ready?" And I'm like, "No." And he's like, "Well, this is how you stop." And what happened was he sent me on this, they got like the real small one that you see all the kids.
Bunny Hill.
Hill. Yeah. And it got like a little magic carpet thing that takes you up on the thing. And so that's where I learned how to stop right there. He taught me. And then from there, I was like, all right, let's go to the next hill. And so I went up to the next hill. And once I got it, I'm pretty fearless. So then I was like, no, I'm good. I'm still intact here. You know,
that's good.
It was good. I came back sick, but I had a good time while I was out there.
Good. So now, see, you're slowly getting into the Western New York thing. Now, what about the Ellicottville nightlife? Very active nightlife down there?
It was actually active. It was like some blues weekend or something like that. So there were a lot of things going on, but I just stayed in the villas and relaxed.
Sure.
Yeah.
Just shut it down.
Shut it down and chill.
Of course, you had the football games to watch yesterday. I trust, unlike last week where we both kind of picked and choose, we only had two games to choose from yesterday over the weekend, and I watched them both. Wasn't blown away by either one of them, but the first game was good. Interesting,
that was good.
Exciting
game. That was definitely a good game, and it's crazy. I know we're going to talk about it. There's a lot to talk about in that game, obviously. There's one thing that I think people are really sleeping on, and it's really time management at the end of the half by the Jaguars, and I think they totally messed that up and gave the Patriots the ball back with the chance to score, and the Patriots went on and scored like they always do, and it turned the tide for that game. But it was a good game. The second game was terrible. I didn't even watch that whole game. I was like, all right, I'm done with this.
That was tough to watch. But at what point would you have done differently, time management? I mean, I know what you mean, that end of the first half sequence. Obviously, they scored again. Mm-hmm. What would you have done differently, though?
I think they didn't do a good job of – I feel like they just run the ball.
Yeah, and they had the ball, I think, deep in their own territory, right, didn't they, at the end of the first half?
Yeah, so they were trying to really play the whole field position
battle.
But it's hard to really play field position with the Patriots.
Plus, they were trying to burn clock, too, which they succeeded first half.
Yeah, they definitely – they held the ball big time in the first half. Second half, they weren't able to do it as much, but – yeah, I just felt like they could have been a little bit more aggressive and tried to get some points on the board. And then they gave the ball back to the Patriots, and the Patriots always find a way to get points going into halftime.
I know the sequence you're talking about. And to me, the Jacksonville game plan, which you kind of outlined, you know, you thought you picked them to win, and you kind of said they're going to have to run the ball and control the clock. They were doing it first half.
Yeah.
I know what you're talking about at the end there, but I thought, well, why – really, literally, why would you change? Why switch it up at this point? Get out of this half with the lead, I thought. No?
I think that's something that is debatable. I think the second thing that people are sleeping on is that whole fumble sequence in Miles Jack. Yeah, and I don't know if by the time he had the ball in his possession, if he was touched down. They blew it dead, which I feel like was a mistake by the refs. They typically will let it go, and you can go ahead and run that thing all the way, and if you're down, you're down, but they don't typically blow it dead, and they did in that in that sequence. So I know that's something that a lot of people are talking about as they talk about penalties and conspiracy theorists and all of that stuff. But that's one play that I think people should be talking about.
There's no conspiracy theory, but I do think they probably didn't get this exactly right. You know, it was kind of a mixed possession, and by the time Miles Jack came up with it, you're right, the contact had ended between himself and who was it, James White there, I think, 28. So by the time Miles Jack had possession of the ball, there probably was not contact to rule him down by contact.
Right.
Right?
Yeah.
Unless
I'm
misinterpreting the rule.
I mean,
he went down as a result of contact with I'm sorry, it was Deion Lewis, not James White.
Yeah.
But he went down as a result of contact with him.
He went down as a result, but by the time he actually had possession of the ball, he wasn't touched at all. And then he got up and started to run. They blew it dead, and so he turned around and spiked the ball. But he was never really touched down by the time he had the ball in his possession. Now, he had stripped the ball out, and the ball was kind of on his body as well. But by the time he truly had possession of the ball, it's like he wasn't touched.
They blew the play dead. There was not a whole lot they could do about it. I guess that's controversy. I don't think – you're not suggesting the referees, because some people look at that and maybe another call or two and then look at instances where the officials were interacting with Patriots players and say, see? See, they want the Patriots to win. I don't. You're not saying that.
Yeah.
I don't believe that.
I mean, I've been on record saying that Patriots get a lot of calls.
Yes.
But I don't.
You are. That's where I'm trying to get you to right now.
Yeah, I've been on record saying that.
They get calls, but, you know, they don't get all the calls.
You can look at that call or them blowing it dead. You can look at the pass interference, which I don't think was a pass interference on A.J. Bouye. I didn't think that one was a pass interference. I mean, that was a great, really defensive play by A.J. Bouye, in my opinion. I think people are looking at the refs smiling in the huddle. I think I wouldn't look too far into that. The refs actually in the huddle smiling. I think that was just a situation where he was caught up in the moment, in the middle of all of those guys, and they had just scored a touchdown. And I mean, I don't know. I don't think they were. The refs were smiling like, I'm on your team. Let's continue to do this.
People get off they go off the charts with that. I will tell you, the sequence that bothered me when the game was still a game and it was still close, and the Jaguars had the ball just under 6 minutes ago. They were deep in their own territory, first down at their own 10 with about 5:50 left to play, and they ran it once. Bortles incompletion. Fourth and 11 at their own 9. They punted it, but it was not a great punt. Nortman's punt was not great,
horrible.
Not covered well.
Yeah.
A 20-yard return by Amendola, who for my money was the most valuable player in that game.
Mm-hmm.
And all of a sudden the Patriots are set up at the Jacksonville 30. They were already essentially in field goal range, and they wound up with a touchdown out of it there. That's the sequence that bothered me more than anything.
That one definitely bothered me because the Jaguars had just come up with a huge stop.
Yep.
And then they get the ball back for their offense. Their offense, at that point, all you have to do is get a couple of first downs. Keep it going like you were able to do in the first half. Get a couple of first downs. Do what you do best. They weren't able to do that. So they end up punting the ball from deep in their own territory, like basically deep into their end zone, punting the ball out. A horrible punt. It was a low punt in the middle of the field. We always talk about – we get Steve Tasker in here. And him and I will always talk about, it's tough to cover something in the middle of the field. You're supposed to kick that thing out to the sideline or something like that. He kicks it low, line drive in the middle of the field where Amendola has all this room to work with. A 20-yard return, you get it back to the 30. I mean, at that point, they're working with house money now. I mean, Patriots are working with house money. And so all they have to do is get into a certain range. They could kick the field goal or score a touchdown, and they end up getting a touchdown.
Yeah. Well, there's a lot to chew on that game, not so much on the second game. We're going to talk about them both today on the show. We got a couple of guests lined up coming up at 1 o'clock. Coy Wire, remember him, former Bills safety linebacker, now does work for CNN. He is in town doing work right now on pre-Super Bowl packages for CNN. And Coy Wire scheduled to join us in studio here at 1 o'clock. And coming up at the 2 o'clock hour, Ruben Frank from NBC in Philadelphia. He'll join us to talk about the Eagles, basically the team that I feel we need to know a little bit more about in the next couple of weeks. It is Senior Bowl week. Our man Chris Brown is headed down there. He'll join us on the show tomorrow. So we're looking at a full week of coverage here, both pre-Super Bowl and, of course, Senior Bowl this week, and we're looking for your participation as well. Phone lines are open, 803-0550 and toll-free 1-888-550-2550. Or you can do it via Twitter at John Murphy Show. You can vote in our Twitter poll, and it's pretty basic. What was your biggest takeaway from Sunday's NFL championship games, both conferences, AFC, NFC. What's the one thing you took out of those games? It's up on Twitter right now, almost 1,000 votes in so far, fairly close voting. 38% of you say you're taking away the fact that Brady is never out of it. Mm-hmm. We knew it going in, reinforced yesterday. Even with a couple of touchdown deficit, Brady, he has a knack. And it's hard to acknowledge when you're here in Buffalo, but he's got it. And he makes it happen when they really need it to happen, sore thumb and all. 36% of you talk about the other quarterback, Nick Foles of the Eagles, better than backup quality. I'm in that camp, too. I think that's been demonstrated now for his last five or six games, and he was on fire yesterday. 16% have something else in mind. 10% like the fact that Bill Belichick finally showed emotion after the Patriots picked up that critical first down at the end of the game, salted it away. Big smile on Bill Belichick's face. When's the last time you saw him smile like that? Mm-hmm. And even in the postgame. That's your takeaway, 10% of you. Give us a call. Let us know what you think. The phone line's open, 803-0550. And toll-free from outside Buffalo, 1-888-550-2550. Your biggest takeaway from yesterday's championship games. Maybe you think the referees are favoring the Patriots. I think that's sort of absurd, but maybe you think that's the case. Let's hear it. Give us a call, 803-0550, and toll-free, 1-888-550-2550. The lines are open for your biggest takeaway from yesterday's championship game. The Jacksonville Jaguars took away a lot from that game, Donald, including the fact that the penalties were out of whack, a little bit out of balance in yesterday's game. Only 7 penalties called in the game. I thought it was a pretty well-played game on both sides, really. But at the end of the day, the Patriots only had the 1 penalty, and the Jacksonville Jaguars had a total of 6 penalties, not a whole lot of penalties. Jaguars aren't happy with that discrepancy. A.J. Boye said he saw Danny Amendola headbutt one of his safeties in front of the ref and no call. He said, I have a lot of respect for the people in this locker room. We knew there was stuff out there we could not control, and we kept it close. Boye said, I got to look at the rule book on pass interference. His pass interference call, I think that was a little bit iffy. Very physical play down the left sideline. I think there was pushing on shoving and shoving on both parts, Boye and the wide receiver. But I just think it's probably a no-call, right, was warranted there, don't you think?
I think it's a no-call. I think you got to let that one go. Like that's a play where you should let that go, the official. I mean, there's nothing really – the only thing you can see is he actually put his right hand up, but there was no push, no nothing. He basically rolled him to the sideline, and that's what a corner – that's what a DB is supposed to do on a downfield ball. As a receiver, you're supposed to stack that DB so that he can't do that to you. If you never stack that DB, it's his right to actually be able to just ride you to the sideline, and that's all he did. I didn't see anything where he extended his hands, grabbed him, any of that stuff. You know, it was just – then you get Brandon Cooks, who actually looks at the official, and then you get the flag. It was
Here's the thing. There's probably too much contact on that play, right?
Mm-hmm.
Too much physicality. But was one guy more guilty than the other? No. So what do you do with that? You let it go?
You're supposed to let it go.
Really?
You
want that kind of contact? You want that kind of pushing and shoving all the way down? And for a good 10 yards, they're kind of wrestling with each other, you know, down the far sideline.
They definitely wrestling with – but that, like you said, they're wrestling with each other.
Yeah.
So that's where you let it go. If you have one guy who's just grabbing like crazy, then you got to throw the flag. But if you have both of those guys going back and forth, you got to let it go. And there's nothing really, like, clean that you could say, all right, he just grabbed him right there, pass interference. There was nothing really clean on that play for the official to throw that flag. So I think that's one that you got
to
let go.
Led to a late Patriots touchdown. It was a big play in the game, no question about that. One of the 6 penalties on Jacksonville that the Jaguars were upset about. Let's take some calls on this. Your biggest takeaway from yesterday's game. Give us a call, 803-0550 and toll-free 1-888-550-2550. I got to say this, too. As the game went along and the good start for Jacksonville, and we kind of wrestled on this show last week, who do you root for? Can they both lose? And you don't like either team. But as the game got started and Jacksonville took an early edge,
I started rooting for him.
I said, oh, Jacksonville has a chance.
Yeah.
Okay. I mean, I kind of forgot all about, Marone. Started rooting for Nathaniel Hackett, the offensive coordinator.
He was calling a good game.
Yeah, he did. It's hard to find a lot of fault with what Jacksonville did, but maybe some of our callers can. In fact, our first caller. Go ahead.
Even Blake Bortles played a good game.
Bortles played well.
A good game.
He did not look like the same guy from 2 weeks earlier.
No, not at all. He played a good game. He made some good passes. Even the last pass that he had where Stephon Gilmore broke it up. I mean, that was a good pass. Stephon just, jumped up in the air and showed some hang time on that play. But I think he played a good game. I think Hackett called a good game. They came in, and they were physical with the Patriots. And everybody, has been talking about the hit on Gronk and all of that stuff. I know we're going to talk about Richard Sherman and his tweet and all of that stuff. That was a – yeah, it was an illegal hit, but that hit was something they were trying to set the tone of the game.
Yeah.
We're here to play. We're here to be physical.
Yeah.
So if you don't want to match that physicality, then somebody's going to get hurt.
Give us a call. Let's go to Terry in Lancaster. Go ahead, Terry. You're on the air.
John, I got 2 points to make. The first point was when they – well, Jacksonville took that 5-yard penalty for a delay of game.
Yeah.
Somebody on that coaching staff should have been able to call a timeout so they didn't take a penalty. Second is, when New England had 3rd and 18 and they were rushing just 4 guys, you need 18 yards for a first down. They should have come with about 6 guys, so Brady would have had to unload that pass in a hurry. Mm. He had all day. He had all day to throw. That was the biggest thing that cost Jacksonville the game, I think.
Well, I like your first point. I got to say, Terry, I think you're right. That, and even Marone admitted it right at halftime, right when he was interviewed, saying we botched that, right? You know, with the delay of game call, there was what was on the clock, 2:23. You know, there was already a timeout. What are they thinking? You know, they gave the Patriots more time. That goes to what you were talking about, mm-hmm. giving them more time. That was a bad mistake for Jacksonville right there.
I mean, it was crazy because they came out of a timeout, right? And
yep.
then you get a delay of game. That's horrible. You can't do something like that in that situation. You can't in any game in the NFL throughout the course of a season, but especially not going against that team in New England in the AFC Championship game. You can't come out of a timeout and get a delay of game. That's not good.
Doesn't make sense.
Are you still there?
Yeah, we're here, Terry.
Shortly after they got that first down, it was a little later that they came with a rush up the middle and they put Brady right on his back. He had too much time he had all day to throw.
Well, I'm going to not go along with that one. I mean, I think overall defensively they did a decent job, especially first half. You don't want to blitz Brady too much. You really don't. You don't want to expose yourself on the back end. You know, Amendola is a master. They didn't get beat deep. Amendola is a master at finding the little over-the-middle stuff. And you know, there was time to throw on the touchdowns, especially the second one. But I don't think you want to blitz Brady a whole lot.
What's interesting to me is, and we know Bill Belichick is a master of taking away what you do best. Now, Jacksonville has had the nickname all year, Saxonville. And they got a few sacks in that game. But the one player that you would think, man, this dude could take over this game, Calais Campbell, you didn't really see
him. No, you're right.
And I wasn't really paying attention to see if they were double-teaming him the entire game. I wouldn't be shocked if they weren't, if they were double-teaming him the entire game. But, I mean, you had a sack by Marcel. You had a sack by some other guys up there. But Calais Campbell, and as you're talking about blitz Tom Brady, this is a team that has been able to get to the quarterback without bringing blitzes. Like that. They've been able to get to the quarterback with their front four all year. Guys that just have taken over the game, then they'll bring a blitz every now and then, and they get to the quarterback even more with that. But, I mean, I would think that going into that game, they felt like we could get to Tom Brady with our front four, and that's why you didn't see that many blitzes. And like you said, you start blitzing Tom Brady all the time, he is going to get to those hot routes, and he is going to pick that apart. And those guys will be wide open because you're blitzing a linebacker. He's going to send that wide receiver right to where that linebacker came from.
A couple of tweets on this. World Gym tweets in, not one penalty on Patriots offense, not one penalty on Patriots defense. Oh, okay. That lot of, I don't know if it's just our show or is this a national phenomenon, but people are blaming the officials for Jacksonville's loss. Michael Vasquez, it's just weird that controversial calls go the Patriots' way and crucial moments of the game can't be coincidence. And World Gym tweets in, it's absurd to think the Patriots don't get calls in Foxborough.
I mean,
does that make people feel better if they think that the officials are on their side?
I can't really, because I've been on record saying that they get all the calls.
The calls.
I've been on record saying, well, not all the calls. They get a lot of calls out there in New England. So
they get calls. People get calls.
I know people get calls.
Look, I think officiating is substandard across the league.
I think
more than just favoring one team or the other. I think very often the officials are not good. And the Miles Jack play, for instance, right there, that one went the Patriots' way. But I think it's kind of a loser's lament to say, well, the Patriots get all the calls. That's why they won. No, they had a second-half comeback with the greatest quarterback of our generation throwing to Dan Amendola, who had the game of his life.
Yeah, this is like a national thing. This is not just here.
Okay.
All right. I mean, everybody's talking about it. Everybody's tweeting about it. So, Instagram, I'm seeing pictures on Instagram with different memes. You got to play the Patriots and the officials.
Well, what does that mean? That doesn't make it real.
I know it doesn't make it. I'm just letting you know it's a national thing. It's okay. Not just here in Buffalo.
Okay. All right. Let's go to David. Hello, David. You're on the air.
Yeah, hello.
Hi, David. You're on the air.
Yeah. Just the thing.
Okay.
When you let the offense come on the field, of course, Brady, even though there's Jacksonville saying all kinds of pressure on Tom Brady, you can't keep putting pressure on the best quarterback in the league. Because every time you do that, Brady finds a way how to get a ball into the end zone. And he threw a ball to Ben Dolan. He made a nice play in the end zone to catch that ball.
Yeah.
When you play one of the greatest quarterbacks, you can't just sit and think you got plays on Brady. Because Brady, he makes a play every time, every single
time.
Yeah,
he does. I think you got to mix it up. I think you got to show him pressure sometimes, and other times you got to cover. And you take your chances with Tom Brady because he's very good. He knows.
Brady throws the ball into the nickel, like in the red zone. He threw that ball up in the air, and Ben Dolan catches the ball. He's a great quarterback. If you don't play good coverage on Ben Dolan, he's going to make you pay.
Amendola.
Yeah.
You know, I heard something. I feel like it was Jalen Ramsey. There were some reports coming out of the locker room that the players were saying in the second half they went a lot more zone than in the first half. They were going all men. And they felt like they were doing a good job with that. And then in the second half, they switched it up and they started going more zone. And Brady started to pick that apart a little bit, you know. So that's what happens when you have young players. You lose a big game, and now everybody's like, well, we switched it up. And it's like, come on, man, you just keep that in the locker room. You want to talk to the defensive coordinator about that. Don't start to speak publicly. But Brady will. That's why you always have to switch it up on Brady. You can't just, all right, we're going to go man. And then we're just going to go zone, or we're going to blitz all game, because he will notice what you're doing, and then he'll eat you alive.
Talk about switching it up. I thought early on the Jaguars did a really good job with Gronkowski switching it up. They had Miles Jack on him. They had the safety on him, Barry Church on him. Obviously, we'll talk about that hit. But they had Jalen Ramsey on him.
Mm-hmm.
They showed him zone. They showed him man. And I thought that kind of where the Bills are at now with Gronkowski, right? Give him a variety of different looks. And then there was the hit that knocked Gronkowski out. Your thoughts on that, Donald? What did you think?
My thoughts on the hit?
Yeah.
I thought it was an illegal hit.
Yeah.
You know, it was done with the helmet. Yeah, it definitely deserved the penalty. I think, though, in that situation, and I'll be honest with you, I think players go into it saying, you know what, I'll take that fine. If I can get Gronk out of this game, I'll take that fine.
You think there's a fine coming along with the hit?
Oh, yeah.
Probably,
yeah. It's definitely a fine coming along.
I mean, I looked at it in terms of they'll gladly take the 15-yard penalty for the hit.
I'll take the penalty.
You don't go into a game thinking that, do you?
No, like, you don't go into a game thinking, yo, I'm going to try to take him out of the game. But if you get the opportunity, and even when he goes up to make that hit, I'm sure he would want to be able to change his target area. But the fact that he hit him, he's like, all right. You know, my bad. He's out of the game now, though.
Yeah.
We'll go ahead and take the penalty. We'll go ahead and take the fine.
Now, Richard Sherman, a famous cornerback for the Seattle Seahawks, had some thoughts on this with a tweet that he issued about the hit. And basically, and he makes a point about from a defensive player's posture here, where am I supposed to hit, basically? What's the target area? Richard Sherman tweeted out something to the effect that, well, what do you want? If he hits him low, they're going to flag him for that, right? And he's going to be called a dirty player for hitting him low. And he hit him high, probably a little too high, and had the helmet hit, which is illegal. He got the 15 yards, and as Donald said, he's likely to get a penalty as well. But I thought Richard Sherman made at least a point, Donald, that we should consider if you want to flip it around and look at it from a defensive player standpoint.
I've heard defensive players actually make this argument on multiple occasions, and it's like, okay, the NFL has now shrunk the target zone so much, I don't know where to go. And everything is about player safety. You're finding everybody and throwing 15-yard penalty flags for hitting guys helmet to helmet. Then I get a fine or I get suspended. But then if I go low, then everybody's going to say I'm a dirty player because I went low, I took his knees out, and I ripped his knees up. You know, Gronk is like 6'12". This dude is huge. He's like 260 pounds. These DBs are not that size. Even if you got these DBs that are 6'1", 6'2", they're like 200 pounds. This dude is 260, so where do you want me to hit him? You want me to hit him right in his core? And then I'm going to hurt myself? No, I'm going to hit them low or I'm going to hit them high. I mean, that's just what it is. And, you know, like I said, I just felt like Church in that play, he was okay with. And you saw in his reaction, he didn't react like, oh, I'm my fault. He reacted like, yeah, all right, he's out of here now. Let's
There's
go
yardage,
ahead and move
we're
forward.
We're
going
to have to pay yardage, and I'm probably going to have to reach into my wallet.
I reach into my wallet. But if that – here's the thing. If taking Gronk out of the game – and I don't want it to sound like you intentionally want to take him out of the game.
Here.
Right, you're not headhunting. But, all right, that play has happened now. He's out of the game. And if I have to get fined, I'll pay for that fine with my bonus check from the Super Bowl.
Yeah.
You know, but – I mean, they obviously didn't make it. But, I mean, that's the nature of football. And guys will take that penalty. They will take that fine. If it's going to help to get us to the next round, which is the Super Bowl, which is the game that everybody wants to get to, I think he was okay with that.
That hit came late in the first half. Gronkowski did not return. You'd think, you know, the 2 weeks until the Super Bowl, he'll probably get through his concussion protocol. But Richard Sherman's point is worth debating, and that's why we're talking about it. As a defensive player, here's what Sherman tweeted. The hit on Gronk is the only way Church could have done his job without just obliterating Gronk's knee. If he would have just hit him low, most people would claim him dirty, would call him dirty. Mm-hmm. So there's nothing he can do to make everyone happy and do his job unless you think he should let him catch it. Now, I don't know if I agree, but I do think there's an argument there from Richard Sherman and defensive players like, okay, where do you want me to hit him? You want me to go low and rip up his knee, which has been injured before?
Right.
You know?
I think Church really did the only thing he could do, or go low and rip up his knee.
Yeah.
And I just feel like, first of all, I mean, I never want to see a guy get hurt. I never want to see, especially with the head injuries and all of that stuff. But, you know, after what Gronk did here, I don't really have any.
No, wait a minute. What does that have to do with it?
I don't really have any, like, sympathy for
well,
him
you don't want helmet
hit.
Hits. What Gronk did here was despicable. And he paid a price for that, too. Maybe not a steep price, but he paid a price for it.
Right.
What Gronk did here was despicable, obviously, to hit a Tre'Davious White down, face down on the turf to cause a concussion there was awful. And he paid the price. But so you're calling for what? Him to be hit in the head as well? Is that what you're saying?
No, it's football.
I think you are.
I mean, it's football. You're all out there on the field. You get hit in the head, you get hit in the head. He did his actually after the play. So,
right.
You know. Whatever.
You can't just say whatever. What? You're glad that he paid?
I'm not glad that he got hit in the head, but the fact that he got hit in the head, it is what it is. You're out there on the football field, and I don't know. Maybe you got what was coming for
no.
you.
I hope you don't think that. Really? Head hits? We're gonna allow head hits? We're going to root for hits to the head now?
I'm not rooting for him to get hit in the head, but, you know.
No, you don't want that.
Things happen in the course of a game.
We're talking about yesterday's
game. So
games.
I don't feel bad that he got hit.
I feel bad that anybody gets a concussion, right? No, you don't. We're talking about yesterday's game. We'll continue this discussion. You're welcome to join us at 803-0550 and toll-free 1-888-550-2550. Your biggest takeaway from yesterday's championship games. Give us a call. We're back with more of the John Murphy Show from One Bills Drive on Buffalo Bills Radio.
We're back with more of the John Murphy Show.
Welcome back, John Murphy, Donald Jones. The matchup is set for Super Bowl 52. It's the Eagles and the Patriots. How do you feel about that? Donald and I were just talking during the break. We don't feel great about it, but there it is. It's Super Bowl 52, just a couple of weeks away, and we'll talk about it over the next couple of weeks, talking about yesterday's games as well. Our Twitter poll deals with your biggest takeaway. What was it? Your biggest takeaway from yesterday's AFC and NFC championship games? Give us a call, 803-0550 and toll-free 1-888-550-2550. Cher on the line with us. Hello, Cher. Go ahead. Good afternoon.
Hey, good afternoon, Murph and Donald. How are you guys?
We're doing okay.
Good.
Okay, great. So just want to commend Donald Jones over there for a few things. This is all good stuff here.
Should I get a pen out? Let me make a list.
Yeah, make your list.
Okay.
This is a list for you. Donald's making some points, and you need to take notes.
Oh, geez, man. Okay.
Yeah, I got you, Donald. So,
thank you.
All right. Number one, yes. Patriots do get calls.
Patriots get calls. How do you spell Patriots? No, go ahead. I'm sorry.
Patriots get the calls.
Okay.
All right, we'll keep it broad like that, and that's a point for Donald Jones today.
Okay, thank you.
All right, and number two for Donald Jones is that Gronk hit. I'm right with you. I don't know what Murph's talking about. I respect Murph. He's the best. But Donald, check for you again.
What, you think it was well, you got to elaborate a little bit more than that. What about the ground kick?
Well, I think Donald elaborated really well. It's football. You know, it's football. But at the same time, I feel no remorse for him because what he did to Tre'Davious White, no remorse.
Okay.
It's football. It was a hit. And I agree that that hit was, and this is a little outside the point, but that hit was, it's impossible to hit the guy in a way, you know, so it's over with. But I don't know. I just agree. I'm just on Donald's side today for a lot of reasons.
Thank you. You know what? We need to meet out at a bar somewhere or something.
If you haven't already. Is there more? Oh, wait, man. I'm sorry. Is there more?
Yeah, the third, last one, the last one. And I'm actually get to my question or my point.
Okay.
Because you, Donald's just wisdom today is skyrocketing today.
I love it.
This is a well-organized call, though. This is good.
Sure. Yeah. And by the way, Donald, I'm originally from New Jersey, but I reside here in Buffalo for the past 10 years, so you know why. We had that connection.
That's sure. What I'm talking
Garden
about.
Garden State.
Now Murph thinks we set this whole thing up. He thinks we met out at a bar somewhere.
No, you met on the turnpike somewhere, one of those.
Yeah, on the turnpike, and I told you.
You're going to remember me from the last time I called because this last point, and it's all good.
Okay.
Don't cut me off. It's just commending – Donald Jones for not crying anymore about the weather lately.
You actually went out and skied in it over the weekend. Isn't that great?
Get out of here. Oh, man. He's embracing it.
Yeah. I was out there, man.
I was in New Jersey like a few weeks ago.
Uh-huh.
It was cold. You know,
it was
18 degrees and 5 degrees in Buffalo and 18 degrees in Jersey. There's no difference between those degrees. It's super cold.
Yeah, right. You're right.
All right, and that's. But you have another point to make here, sure.
I will. My only point. I really hate to say this. It hurts me because I was a New York Knicks fan growing up, and no matter how far the Knicks got in the 90s, you cannot beat Jordan. I'm sorry. You just cannot beat him unless he retires and plays baseball. But now, my point is, I hate to say this, but Tom Brady is about to surpass Michael Jordan.
That's a good question. Has he already?
No, I mean, I think Jordan, because, you know, it's basketball, it's more individual, and football is such a team sport. I mean, look, who knows Terry Bradshaw that much? He won 4 Super Bowls. I mean, we kind of know Montana a little bit, but at the same time, he had a great team. He had a great wide receiver. He had a great coach. I think the same thing applies to Brady in a way, but he's 40 years old. He had a bum hand in some degree. I mean, in Buffalo, we would have been like, if anyone had even a scratch on Tyrod's hand, he would never even play, or he wouldn't even pass 50 yards. So I think Brady with a bum hand, no Gronkowski for most of the game. I really think if he wins another ring, it's over. It's Brady, then Michael Jordan.
As the greatest athlete of all time?
I think so. Because, you know, it's going to be such a hot topic after he wins.
Right.
And we're talking about him at 40 years old. I mean, I don't think – what was Jordan like in his mid-30s or something, early 30s? I don't know when he won his last championship. But 40 years old to win a championship, and it's all him. I mean, that last game against Jaguars, it was all him. I mean, at the end, you know, he brought him back. So that's all I got to say, and I want to just say those good things about Donald Jones and keep up the good work, and I'll call you guys again.
Thanks,
right,
sir.
That was
a very interesting and well-thought-out call. He put some work into that call.
He did, and thank you. But that is actually a good debate. I'm sure it's going to be talked about, especially if he wins another one. Tom Brady, greatest. He's already up there, but is he the greatest athlete of all time?
Can we wait till after they win the Super Bowl to have that discussion in a couple of weeks? Can we wait a couple of weeks?
Yeah.
But I do agree with you, though. It's right there, and it's inevitable, right? It's inevitable that even, you know, that game's going along yesterday, and love what the Jaguars were doing. Love how they played in the first half. Yes, they made a couple of plays that you're thinking, don't get delay a game there.
Right.
You know, don't let them score at the end of the half, but. You knew in the back of your mind there was going to be a run. Now, I wasn't certain it'd be successful for Brady and the Patriots.
Right.
But you knew it was coming, and it came, and it worked again, like it always does with them.
It's rare that in the playoffs a team will go up on Brady. Sorry about that.
Yeah.
So it's rare that a team will go up on Brady in the playoffs and he doesn't put a run at the end of the game. Now, it might not be all the way successful where they win it. They might drop a pass or something like that, as we saw Wes Welker a few years back. He dropped a couple of passes. But you know that Brady is going to make a game of it at least. Even if he's down 21 points, he's going to make a game of it at the end of the game. And it's so hard when you're in that situation. I've been in that situation in regular season games against Brady, and this dude is like, you know it's coming. You know it's coming. You've covered the games. You know that it's – everybody here in Western New York has sat and watched it over and over and over. You go up on them, and everybody's all happy, and then all of a sudden they get a touchdown at halftime, and it's like, well, there you go. That's the first sign right there. They get a touchdown, and usually they're getting the ball back. I don't think they got the ball back this time, but they make those adjustments at halftime, and you know, here comes Brady. And then they make another play. Then they make another play, and the next thing you know, they're down by 3 points mm-hmm. or something like that. Then they might get a field goal, or they get the ball and they just score a touchdown. And it's like, man, you just saw it coming. You knew it was coming. And so I think you have to put him right now. He's definitely top two. I think it's either him or Jordan. If he wins another one, it's definitely going to be Brady as the best athlete of all
time. Game, Jacksonville's game yesterday reminded me, and we see him, you know, twice a year, the Patriots, but it was kind of like many of the Bills games have gone against New England during the Brady era, right? You're playing with him. You're doing what you need to do. The Jaguars scored touchdowns early on, you know, in their first possessions when they needed touchdowns and not just field goals. You make a mistake or two, they make you pay.
Right.
And then at the end, there's no margin for error, you know. And again, that sequence where they had to punt it, you know, 20-yard punt return by Amendola, set him up on the 30. The game was over at that point.
Really. Right.
The game was over at that point.
When they got it on the 30. Around the 30-yard line. Yeah. Was it the 30?
Yeah.
When they got it at the 30-yard line, you knew it was over. It was like, all right, this thing is over. As good as the Jaguars' defense had played all day, they had just made a big stop. You gave them the ball back again?
Yeah.
Oh, at the 30-yard line? I mean, you have the combination of Josh McDaniels with Tom Brady. Josh McDaniels is a master of calling plays. I mean, this dude's playbook is ridiculous. I've been there, so I've seen it. And I'm like, wow, this is amazing, the type of stuff that they have in their arsenal. And then you have those receivers that make play after play. These little receivers like Amendola and Edelman and even a Chris Hogan. Yeah, Wes Welker. I mean, these dudes are just making crazy plays. And you're like, man, why? These dudes shouldn't even be playing in the NFL. They're like 5'10".
What about the playbook is incredible? What did you see in your tenure there at New England?
Just how extensive it is, just how thick it is, number one. How many different combinations of routes that they have for different coverages and things like that. And then when you listen, you sit and listen to Josh McDaniels actually call those plays, it's amazing. And they switch it up every week. They switch up different rules every week based on who it is that they're playing. I mean, it's really something to see, that playbook out there that they have. And Brady knows it front to back. And the rest of those guys, they've been there for a while now. Amendola, he was there when I was there. He signed the same day as me. Edelman's been there forever. Chris Hogan's now been there for a couple of years. Those guys know it front to back, and they all work well together. And then you add the running backs in there with Lewis and White and Burkhead. I mean, that's why they're so good. They have the guys that have been in that system now for a few years. They understand what it is that they're trying to do. They know the playbook front to back. And it just makes it a lot easier for them to be able to make those plays.
We're going to break. We've got more to come. We're going to talk about your takeaways from Sunday's championship games, AFC and NFC. We'll take your phone calls, 803-0550 and toll-free 1-888-550-2550. Former Bills safety linebacker Coy Wire coming up in the next hour, so make sure you stick around for that. The John Murphy Show from One Bills Drive. This is Buffalo Bills Radio.
We're back with more of the John Murphy Show.
Welcome back to the show. John Murphy, Donald Jones. We're holding down the home front this week. Chris Brown, Bills insider from BuffaloBills.com, is on his way to Mobile, Alabama for the Senior Bowl. Game is Saturday. Practices start Tuesday. I got a Senior Bowl schedule right here. I should look at it. Practices start tomorrow. North team, South team. Quarterbacks, a couple of interesting quarterbacks there, and Chris will be covering it all starting tomorrow right here on the show. Our Bills insider, Chris Brown, from the Senior Bowl in Mobile, Alabama, practices tomorrow. Interesting rosters. I'm looking forward to Chris's coverage. I kind of wish I were there, to be honest with you.
I wish I was there, too. I think there's a lot of big names, especially the quarterback position, which everybody here wants to know about. It would have been fun to be down there and talk to those guys, talk to a Baker Mayfield, Josh Allen, all of those boys down there. And I just love the vibe down there.
Me too.
At Mobile. I've only been as a player, and it would be fun to be back now and not have to worry about, you know, I got to go to practice and all of that stuff and worry about, you know, I got to be on my A game all the time because scouts are all over the place. I mean, you never know who is who, but I loved it when I was down there. I'm sure Chris and the rest of the guys are going to have fun.
Practices start tomorrow at 2:30 Eastern time in Mobile. South team, then North team, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday practices. We'll get Chris Brown's reports all this week from Mobile, Alabama. You know what I like about the vibe down there? The optimism. Every team is optimistic.
Yeah.
You know, it's the perfect way to turn over a season. Now, the Bills for years have gone down there without a playoff spot. Now they have the one playoff game in their resume. But to go down there and be able to look ahead instead of behind and to look ahead at the prospects and talk with people from around the league about what's coming up, draft picks, free agency, that's the best
what's,
part about it.
This is really like the first stage of optimism.
Yeah.
You know, for the next year. And everybody's like, all right, you got this guy. And we're going to get it. Once fans start to watch the practices, they're like, "Hey, man, the Bills! You're gonna get the tweets. I'm gonna get the tweets. You need to draft so and so." So this is like the first stage of optimism going towards next season. Which teams are, which coaching staffs are actually coaching this game?
I don't know, Donald. I've been looking for that. Let me do a little research. That's a good question. Yeah. I'm sure it's right up there. Let me find that. I'm not sure who's got the game. Let's go to Chris in Cheektowaga. Hello, Chris. You're on the air.
Hey, Murph, I just wanted to kind of go over, and I know you probably think it's ridiculous, but the penalties, I guess the thing for me is watching the playoffs all this year, I've seen way worse interference calls, and everything I've heard from every commentator, every official that's now commentating on the games is the officials are letting them play this playoffs, right? I've seen way worse calls let go through the wild cards, through all the divisional games. But Brady gets two in this game, right, for 75 yards. So it's not just six penalties. It's two of them for 75 yards. And if he doesn't get that first one before the half, I think it's a different game, right? Mm. So, and you guys
– the first one was a legitimate – that was the one, right? That was a legitimate pass interference, right? Not the one that we talked about earlier on this hour.
The first one before the half, wasn't that the one he pushed him out? He ran him out of bounds. At the first half, wasn't that one?
The penalty on A.J. Boye, yeah, that was right at the end of the first half. Yeah, second quarter with a minute.
And the second one on Boye, I thought, was the questionable one. I thought the first one's legit, isn't it? I mean, you don't want him to swaddle the whistle here and not call anything, do you? Anything goes?
Which one was the first one?
They have
That one?
Yeah.
I thought that one was the questionable one.
Oh.
The one where he just rides him to the sideline. I mean, he never really grabs him or does. I thought that one was the one where – you let that one go. I can't even remember the second one on A.J. Boye. I remember the only other one that I can remember is on Jalen Ramsey when he caught up and grabbed one of the receivers on a deep ball.
You want him just swallowing the whistle, even in playoff games? Is that what you want, Chris?
Here's the thing. So, and this is something you can tell me. I can't look it up. But I think, to me, once a game I see Brady, and that's where it gets iffy for me. Once a game, he gets one of those where he just throws it up, and they get a long, long pass interference. They did it against Buffalo. They got two in this game. I think when I watch a lot of games, they get that call, and I don't see a lot of other teams doing it, right? So I don't want them to eat the whistle. So here's the weird one, too. So in the Buffalo game, everybody talks about that catch with Benjamin. I think Gilmore is draped all over Benjamin in that catch. Nobody talks about that, right? So there's on top of that catch getting overturned, he was interfered with that whole catch, and they let it go. So that's where I think people get a little bit jaded about the Patriots, right? They see calls all playoffs that are worse than what we see, and they did eat the whistle all playoffs. Do you think so or no?
No, I haven't noticed it that much. They've called some pass interference. This is what troubles me. Is there a conspiracy that let's get the Patriots in there, or is it more like, well, they're the Patriots, they're good, they must be doing something right here? I mean,
I think it's that. I think they must be, right? I think the official aren't really that great, and I think they get, just because they are good, they get the benefit. I don't think Buffalo gets those benefit of the calls ever. One of the interesting statistics I heard was there was only one other time in AFC playoffs where one team only was penalized once in the whole history of the AFC championship game, and that was New England, right? So do I think they're that well coached that they only get one penalty a game because their linemen don't hold or they don't interfere? I don't think that's true. I think they get a lot of benefit of the doubt because of the Patriots.
Okay. I hope that's not true. I don't think it's true. You'd think it's true. I mean, this has been going on in sports, by the way, for forever, that the good teams, the successful teams, get the benefit of the doubt. Right. That's what people say. Is it tangible? Is it real? I mean, I guess I'd need more than just anecdotal seat of the pants. Remember that? You know, I'd need to
you
see
ever,
something.
You ever wonder, and I know that refs obviously grew up fans of a certain team or maybe have become fans of a certain team. You ever wonder, like, how could you be a ref and not be a fan of a certain team?
No, I don't.
No?
No, because I think I don't think they're great officials in the NFL, but I give them this. They're professionals. It's their profession. You know, they're trying to do a good job.
I know they're trying
to do a good
job.
I grew up as a Bills fan. I mean, the Bills said that the guy from the Rochester area from, Livonia, New York in the playoff game, do you think he went in there thinking, oh, this is my team. This is the Buffalo Bills. This is my favorite team. Maybe I can slice a few things their way today. I don't think so. Come on.
I don't think he wants to slice it their way, but, I mean, he probably is a Bills fan. So it's kind of hard to
– from Pittsburgh, lives in Pittsburgh. Do you think he goes out and Steelers? Oh, boy, I got my Steelers today. Let's see what I can do. Really? No.
It's hard. It's so hard because we've seen so many crazy things. I was just talking about this in the other room. We've seen officials in the past be caught doing certain things, especially on the NBA side of things. So you never know what's happening in
pro sports. Steve Freeman played for the Buffalo Bills. Steve Freeman.
Is that what you're talking about from New York?
No, Steve Freeman from Mississippi played for the Buffalo Bills.
No.
So does he go into a Bills game and think, no, I'm back here, I'm the back judge. Maybe if the clock's winding down, maybe I'll just
get it. I'd love to give them the benefit of the doubt, but you can never say never. That's what I'll say.
I think they're not good in many cases, but I don't think they're crooked. I don't think they're a leaning bias one way or the other. I just think they miss stuff. I think they're overloaded, quite frankly, with too many things to watch, too many decisions to make. But I don't think it's a question of bias one way or the other. I really don't. I think it's a question of confidence
more than
anything.
I can never – I don't know. And we've seen things happen in the past. So, you know, whether you're biased or whether something has happened before the game, whatever the case may be, I can never say never. I think anything can happen, and pro sports is too much money involved in it.
Hey, your question about Senior Bowl, it is the Denver Broncos coaching the North team, the Houston Texans coaching the South. I saw something where the Broncos – was coaching staff requested to coach.
I'm sure they did. North, so they need a quarterback.
Yeah.
They're like, all right, can we get in there? Can we get in there? And originally it was supposed to be San Fran was in the reports as well in the beginning of possibly San Fran will be the coaching staff. Well, we all know that, I mean, their quarterback is going to be free agent, but I think they'll lock that up before that even happens. So they don't need a quarterback. So y'all want to go ahead and coach them? Go ahead and do it.
Denver Broncos coaching staff will have a look in their room and in their practices at Josh Allen, Baker Mayfield, Luke Falk, three of the top quarterbacks in the Senior Bowl.
I mean, if you're a team in need of a quarterback, this is a game where I want to coach that game. I want to coach it. I want to coach these kids because it's one thing when you're there as scouts and all of that stuff, and you're standing there, you're watching practice, but I played in the Senior Bowl, so I had the Denver, the Detroit Lions as our coaches, and they're running meetings with you. They're running film, all of that stuff, putting you through the test of can you remember this playbook, all of that stuff. So they get firsthand look at all of these guys when you're actually the staff that's coaching. So I'm not shocked that they did request it.
All right, we got a couple hours to come, and coming up next hour, Coy Wire, former Bills safety, former Bills linebacker, now working with CNN in town, working on a story. We'll talk with him about that and talk with him about his Bills years and talk to him about yesterday's games. Coy Wire standing by to join us next in studio. The John Murphy Show presented by Napa Auto Parts. We are live at One Bills Drive on Buffalo Bills Radio.
Radio Network Sports Update.
Update from One Bills Drive. The Super Bowl matchup is set. The Philadelphia Eagles, and they're going up against New England. The Eagles, the biggest Super Bowl underdog since 2009. 5.5-point underdogs, according to Westgate Superbook in Las Vegas. The Patriots are going to look for their second straight Super Bowl title, their third in the last four seasons, when they played the Eagles February 4th, U.S. Bank Stadium in Minneapolis. Jacksonville Jaguars called for 6 penalties in yesterday's AFC Championship game, including 2 big pass interference flags. The Patriots flagged just once for 10 yards. Some Jags players not blaming the refs, but at least one A.J. Bouye says he was not happy with the discrepancy in penalties. It is Senior Bowl week in Mobile, Alabama. The Bills Brain Trust on their way now. More than 100 of college football's most talented seniors and fourth-year juniors that have graduated are drawing the eyes of front office execs, scouts, and coaches from all 32 NFL clubs. Bills head coach Sean McDermott is there, along with the Brain Trust, Brandon Bean, the general manager. And they'll be meeting with the media down there tomorrow. Our man Chris Brown, covering the Senior Bowl in Mobile, Alabama, will have his reports coming up starting tomorrow from the Senior Bowl. Vikings offensive coordinator Pat Shurmur expected to be named the Giants head coach this week, according to ESPN. Shurmur now available after the Vikings lost in the NFC Championship game. The expectation is a deal could be done by tomorrow. Dick LeBeau, defensive coordinator for the Tennessee Titans, is likely on the way out, not to return next season. Informed he would not be invited to join the staff of new head coach Mike Vrabel over the weekend, according to reports. LeBeau has been around coaching in the NFL since 1973. The Jets likely to stay in-house to fill their offensive coordinator vacancy. Todd Bowles expected to name Jeremy Bates to the position. Bates has been their quarterback coach this past year. And the Buffalo Sabres open up a three-game road trip tonight in Calgary. 9 o'clock face-off tonight. The Sabres have had good success in recent meetings with Calgary. 2 wins and a tie in their last 3. That is the update from One Bills Drive. John Murphy, Donald Jones in our One Buffalo studio, and a special guest in studio, in town, for his new role with CNN. Happy to have former Bills safety and linebacker Coy Wire in studio with us. Coy, thanks for coming by.
My pleasure to be here, and nice to meet you. Nice, and how lucky are you to get to work with living legend John Murphy?
Living legend, this
is exciting for me. Exciting to be back in Buffalo and to be here with you guys.
It's rough at times.
Are you a former linebacker or safety? I wrestle with that.
I'm a former wannabe. I was just like this undersized dude that just gave it all I had. I was drafted here as a safety. I'd never played the position before. Next thing you know, my rookie year, I'm starting covering Jerry Rice, Randy Moss, my head spinning. So I just kind of did whatever they needed me to do or asked me to do. I was going to go all out. And for most of my career, that was special teams. That was our world here. And we had some pretty good ones.
Coy was a third-round pick out of Stanford. I didn't know this till I was doing some research today, Coy. At Stanford, you were the first player in modern history at Stanford to lead the team in rushing yardage one year. And then the next year, lead the team in tackles.
Yeah, that's right.
That's
I was a running
right
back my entire life. I swore I was the next great white hope in the NFL. I was going to be a running back, and Stanford gave me a chance. I played my first 2 years at Stanford as a running back and then switched to linebacker. It was the days of Pat Tillman and Adam Archuleta, so that smaller, prototypical linebacker. But then Buffalo drafted me and turned me into a safety, and that's when my world turned all around.
What is it about Stanford? I've always wondered this, because Stanford is – I mean, it's a pretty good school, and it's tough to get in. It's tough to get
it's
in.
It's not Youngstown State, but it's not. Okay.
Hold on, chill out. It's hard to get in, but they get great athletes going into that school, and they have pretty good teams every year.
Yeah, I think the one thing, as we know in sports and what we're seeing with the team that's returning to the Super Bowl here, the Patriots yet again, it's not just always the physical makeup, it's the mental makeup. It's what separates the mighty from the mundane in the NFL. And I think at Stanford, they're very fortunate. They don't really have maybe the greatest players on paper. They do have some really talented athletes, obviously, but more than anything, it's a special group that they find there. They have to go all over for academic purposes. They have to go up to Canada. They have to go to the islands. They have to pull from all over the country, and they find these guys who may not be the biggest, fastest, or strongest, but they're very strong in mind. They're very disciplined, and they try to outwork everyone every day. So.
Now, I always wonder, when you are an athlete there, and you're there with, like, people that are starting freaking crazy tech startups and all types of stuff, I mean, academically – what's going through your mind? Because you're an athlete, but you're also there for
school. Very challenging. But, you know, and I don't mean this in any disrespectful way, because I do not take for granted that I got a scholarship to go to that place. And my grades were good enough, but I tell people all the time, I went to college to study football. Like, that was my passion. You know, some people go to become a doctor or a lawyer. I wanted to play in the NFL, and so that's why I went there. But it certainly was challenging. I know, you know, we were held to a higher standard than maybe we thought we were going to be. But what an incredible experience. You talked about some of the people you might run across. Right. I was sitting in class next to princes of other countries. Chelsea Clinton was in my freshman dorm when Bill Clinton was president, and there were Secret Service guys with IFBs and trying to dress like college students, but you knew they were Secret Service. Real quick, funny story on that. She kind of got lost at a frat party one time, and these guys just started throwing people all over the place trying to find Chelsea. But really cool moments like that you get at Stanford that maybe you don't get as often
as
some other places.
John
can say that.
Corey Wire is in studio with us, the former Bills safety who's now with CNN. I was thinking, reading that story a minute ago about Dick LeBeau, you were here when Dick LeBeau spent his year with the Buffalo Bills.
Yes.
Were you aware of his presence, his gravitas, I mean, how important he was?
Absolutely. And I'll remember every year he says his traditional Christmas poem, and there's little things that he would say that I remember to say, oil it up, Buffalo, oil it up, oil it up at stretch, at practice. And that was, you know, the little things like him. He's a supreme leader. He's the type of person, he walks into a room and he makes everyone feel a little better, a little lighter on their feet. When he leaves, you just have that good feeling about you. He really does a great job of bringing people together and bringing out the best in them.
6 years with you with the Buffalo Bills, no playoff appearances. That was the beginning of what is now dead, the Bills playoff drought. But what do you recall, like your high points, your best moments of that tenure in Buffalo?
I tell you, my dream, as I've already mentioned, was to play in the NFL someday. I had never seen a game in person, though. And so the first time I ever saw an NFL game in person was when I ran out there through that tunnel these fans in this city. I'm getting the goosebumps right now. That is my most memorable moment. Dream come true.
Corey Wire is in studio with us. Went on to the Atlanta Falcons. And you played in the Super Bowl, right, with the Falcons?
No, got close. We got slaughtered by Aaron Rodgers for the Packers in the playoffs. But we were the number one seed in the NFC Championship game. I actually played in a championship, not championship game. We were the number one seed in the NFC heading into that, and one game away from that championship game before we got beaten. But two playoff experiences in my 3 years there, so it was really incredible. The organization had never had back-to-back winning seasons all the way back to 1951 or whatever it was. And I kind of came in the same time as Matt Ryan, and things got turned around when he got there. Got very fortunate. Julio Jones was a teammate of mine there, and so we had some really good rosters and great leadership from Arthur Blank on down.
Now, Corey, you, of course, firmly entrenched at CNN, but you've worked hard on this television career, right? Weren't you doing games out west for a while, like college football games?
Yeah, I started that. Someone said you'd be good at calling games, and Pac-12 networks had just started up, and it was a good fit for me, having played at Stanford. And I went out there, and they said, we'll let you call four games in the booth, and I did. And they said, well, you want to do studio shows the rest of the season? I did that. Next thing I know, I worked for Fox Sports for 2 years doing college football, and then CNN came knocking on my door. Fortunately, I was still living in Atlanta. That's where our world headquarters are, and now I'm not much football at all. I do all sports, and we're not ESPN, so there's hardly any stats. It's more the stories behind the stories, the inspirational, the motivational, you know, people of great character that we try to share those stories, the power of sport motivating people. And that's why I'm here today in Buffalo.
It brings you here to Buffalo to do a story with Jim Kelly.
That's right.
Hall of Fame quarterback.
Yeah, so we do a CNN special every year, a Super Bowl special. It's 30 minutes. And this Super Bowl Sunday is World Cancer Day. And so we wanted to use this angle of Jim Kelly having been to four Super Bowls, one of them being in Minnesota where this year's game will be played. But also, 2017 football season was an incredible year for the power of sport. J.J. Watt raising nearly $40 million for hurricane victims. Colin Kaepernick and all that came positive for that. Athletes becoming socially aware. Right. And here you have Jim Kelly, who, of course, going through what he has gone through with cancer. And we want to share his story and how he is inspiring others and people like him. We went to a support group, spent about 3 hours there, and they meet once a month. It's called SPONK. It's for the, you know, head and neck cancer patients, and they've been doing it for a decade. Jim had never been to the group, and when he got there, he's used to inspiring, motivating people, talking at them to inspire them. But what happened there was really interesting. I don't know that he had ever spoken to a group like that, because what happened was they started to tell their stories. And Jim sat down, and you could see his whole vibe change. And he said, I'm not talking at them. I'm talking with them. Mm-hmm. And you could see him starting to become inspired by them and their stories. So it was very powerful. It was at the Kevin Guest House downtown. And it was a truly special thing that organization is doing there, SPONK, and what Jim now is doing with his adversities and using it to inspire others.
I was telling you, I just went to Jim's daughter's wedding a week and a half ago, and Jim's got an incredible story, and he's still got this, you know, a big wedding, but he's still got this sense of family and friends, but he just has a unique ability to pull people together. He's unbelievable.
It is unbelievable, and it's a shame that it wasn't that big of a wedding. I heard there were only about 800 people there.
Yeah, right.
But to your point, John, it's someone who has been through a lot and who has experienced great pain, but also great victories in his life, but it really hasn't changed him much, you know, and you get the feeling that he kind of is that guy that was just some kid that grew up 60 miles outside of Pittsburgh, and I think that's what draws people to him. But it's really powerful when you have someone who recognizes the blessings they've been given and they try to use them to do good. So it's been a pleasure to get to spend some time with Jim and help share his and Buffalo's story upcoming Super Bowl.
It's always interesting because sports, we use sports as a metaphor for life a lot, especially when you're doing public speaking. And Jim, who went to 4 Super Bowls but never got a chance to win the game as a quarterback, I'm sure that hurts, right? When you go back to back to back to back and you lose all of them and it's like, come on, man, we can't get it done. And then you have to deal with this cancer. And for him to be able to battle through that, he's like, man, the 4 Super Bowls are nothing compared to the cancer, but I've been through a lot of different things in my life. And so I can battle this cancer.
Yeah, you know, it's interesting. He said that essentially it's not what happens to us, it's what goes through us. He says, I don't tell people we had 4 Super Bowl losses. We had 4 Super Bowl appearances, and that's still something we can be proud of. Even in our greatest defeats, we can still find victories, right? And he was telling me about how those bonds that he's made with some of his teammates, they still go on trips together with their wives. And so those are the things you focus on, and you use those powerful, positive lessons that you learned even through your toughest times, and you use those to help others, then it's all worth it.
And Corey, this is a story that'll air around the Super Bowl on CNN or
It's a 30-minute special. It'll be probably an hour or two before the game. I don't have the specifics yet of when it will be, but they'll break away from all the madness and the politics and the chaos. And I'm one of the most envied men at CNN because I get to talk about sports, and they give us 30 minutes to do a Super Bowl special, previewing a bit from each team, but then also we always try to find a human interest piece, and Jim Kelly from right here in Buffalo is going to be that angle.
What a great story. And even though you don't cover football regularly now, you probably watched or kept an eye on yesterday's games. Any thoughts on the Super Bowl matchup?
Unfortunately, I missed the game, but fortunately it's because I was flying here and I was trying to look on my iPad and there were no TVs on the plane, so I was like trying to Twitter follow the game. I haven't gone back to watch
them
yet.
What do you think of this matchup, though?
I love the matchup because
you're like the only person in the
I know, right? Well, I always try to find the positive, like we talked about. And the positive is you have this perennial powerhouse, the kings of football for the past decade going back, and they got there because of their leadership and team chemistry, right? And if you look at this other franchise that is coming with a backup quarterback now, in the same way, they are there. It's because of that team chemistry. They're one of the teams who this year went out into the communities with the whole Colin Kaepernick movement. And they used that as a positive way to try to change their communities into positive light, from Jeffrey Lurie going out into the communities with police ride-alongs. They're making a difference in their communities. Chris Long, their defensive end, donated his entire salary this year to education. You have leaders like that on a team that create some bonds that separate you from all the rest. When that game's on the line, those close moments, you shine when others do not. Right. And that's what I like about this. In this same way, these two teams may not be the greatest on paper, but they have this and this. And that's what every team, every coach wants to have on their team. They've got it. So I think we're going to see a really special game.
It's great to catch up with you, Corey. Thanks for spending a few minutes with us.
It's my pleasure to be here.
Really appreciate it. Corey Wire, former Bills safety linebacker, 6 years with the Bills, 3 years with Atlanta, and now in Atlanta with CNN. You can look for his story regarding Jim Kelly on their special coming up around Super Bowl Sunday. We thank Corey Wire for joining us in studio. We got more to come. The John Murphy Show from One Bills Drive. This is Buffalo Bills Radio.
We're back with more of the John Murphy Show.
Welcome back to the show, John Murphy and Donald Jones. Again, thanks to Corey Wire for joining us. You two never played together, but you can see why he's such a popular guy, right?
Great attitude, great personality. You could see his size. He was like a tweener.
Yeah, player. Right? Safety, linebacker, what is he? When they asked him to play linebacker, I recall thinking to myself, that's not fair. That's just not fair. But he gave it, he gave it his best. It was kind of a bad Buffalo defense. It's like early 2000s, and he gave his best shot, but it wasn't fair.
But here's the thing, though. I think now, especially when you look at some of the teams from yesterday, let's look at Jacksonville's defense. Now, those linebackers might be a little bit bigger than he is, but and we can see it here with Matt Milano. They have more of these tweener type of players because you need the speed, because the tight ends are running up the field with a lot of speed. You need to be able to cover these running backs who are catching passes out of the backfield. So I feel like you're going to see a lot more of these tweener type of players like he was.
I got a tweet from Lorenzo Alexander says, tell Coy What up? Love competing against him.
What is
Lorenzo's on vacation.
He is on vacation. He's tweeting it out.
Looking at his phone, he's probably sitting, one of those guys sitting on the beach. Yeah. Where'd he go? Jamaica?
Jamaica.
Sitting on the beach just staring at his phone.
His wife's probably like, listen.
Put the phone down.
You worry about that stuff when we get back to Buffalo. Put your phone down right now.
Thanks to Coy for joining us, though. That was a lot of fun. Talking about yesterday's games, your takeaway from yesterday's game. Give us a call, 803-0550 and toll-free 1-888-550-2550. Matt calling from Canandaigua, New York. Hello, Matt. Welcome.
Hey, John, Donald. How are you guys doing?
Okay. Yeah.
Okay, so first, I was very impressed with Jacksonville's defense. They got some stud linebackers in secondary. Mm-hmm. Now, I want to go into New England. First off, I think Belichick and the Patriots' legacy is going to be tainted always by cheating.
Sure.
I mean, I'm not saying there's a conspiracy, but how can one team over the last 15 plus years seem to always benefit when it comes to a bad call, overturned call? Scandals, et cetera. I mean, this year alone, you had Kelvin Benjamin, Jesse James, and then once Grunt goes out, the referees completely changed how they started calling the game.
No.
I mean, it's you've had Don Shula even coined the nickname Bill Belichick. You've had Marshall Faulk and Kurt Warner publicly say that they are almost certain that their signals were stolen before the game in that Super Bowl, because they had checks that they never did all year, and somehow the Patriots were able to adjust to those checks perfectly. Either he's the greatest, most unbelievable coach, or something crazy is going on and something's happening, and I'm just waiting for the next scandal to occur.
All right, Matt, thanks. He is a really good coach, Belichick, but certainly they've been punished for the scandals. I mean, they lost. The league took their quarterback out for 4 games.
You're not cheating, right off the trying.
I don't think there's a conspiracy. Do good teams get the benefit of calls? Yeah, in all sports they most likely do. But I don't think it's let's favor the Patriots. How do you argue that when they took Brady off the field for 4 games a year ago? How does that benefit the Patriots? How did that scandal benefit them?
Right.
Didn't. I think it was over the top, actually.
I think the whole thing was over the top.
Yeah.
The whole thing and how long it went and then Brady going to court and all of this stuff was all over
Terrible.
The top.
Yeah. Did that benefit the Patriots in the end? No, they lost Brady for 4 games.
They lost him. They lost him. They still ended up winning the Super Bowl.
Yeah. Yeah. Look, I don't like the Patriots, but this whole conspiracy thing, and I just think it's a loser's complaint. It's like that's what you do when a team is excellent for a long period of time. You blame somebody else. How about you give them credit for having good players and a good coach and the greatest quarterback, as an earlier caller said, maybe the greatest professional athlete in history. Maybe he is.
What about this? And this is on a whole different topic. We were just talking about these tweener players. And when you think about Coach McDermott and his defense from Carolina and the speed that he had at the linebacker position down in Carolina, and everybody's talking about the Bills going to take a quarterback in the first round. You're going to trade up to get a quarterback. The national guys, like the guys, that, you know, Mel Kiper and these guys, they have all defense. You look at all of these mock drafts right now, it's all defense. And so when you look at the Jaguars and how they actually were able to match up against the Patriots yesterday and with those quick, fast linebackers, I mean, would you be shocked if Coach McDermott said, you know what, we need some speed at the linebacker position
and went with that? I think we're so early in the process, though, Donald, the draft process. I think the mock draft people – people putting out their mock drafts, they're just kind of throwing darts right now because you know, what's going to happen in free agency?
Yeah.
You know, what's going to where are the quarterbacks going to go? Maybe the Bills will solve their quarterback through free agency. Maybe they'll do something else with the quarterback. I don't put much stock in mock drafts.
I mean I don't put much stock in either. We know it's never right.
Always trade and do a bunch of stuff. That's a different thing, but we're talking about 3 months away now, right?
But so much happens on draft day with trades and different things that, I mean, a lot of times this stuff is wrong. I mean, you look at the final mock drafts that these guys put out last year and how the draft actually went down, it's probably totally different. Nobody thought Foster was going to go to San Fran, the last pick of the first round. But
he had Mahomes being up where the Bills were.
Damn. Right, right, exactly. So I think, though, a lot of teams, especially in the teams in this division, were probably watching –
the Jaguars, and it's easier said than done. Oh, we need speed at the linebacker position. You got to find the right guys that can play. But you're watching it saying, all right, these dudes actually match up with them well. If Brady's going to be playing another 3 or 4 years, we need to make sure we have the speed at the linebacker position to match up with Gronk and the rest of these receivers and running backs that they have coming out of the backfield.
Maybe. The counter-argument is, if you don't get your quarterback now, when are you going to get him? You know, you got all that draft capital, all those picks to work with.
Yeah.
What are you waiting for? You know, how much longer do you want to wait?
Let's see.
You don't want to reach, but you got money in your pocket. You can spend in this draft. Let's take the call here. Gary in Attica. Hello, Gary. Welcome. You're on the air.
Yeah, I got a certain thing about a penalty that happens throughout the year.
Okay.
How come on an extra point, if the defense does a personal foul, the penalty is enforced on the kickoff? With 80% of your balls going to the end zone, it's a free hit. The defense can take out your kicker, and they're really not getting penalized for it. I think that should be enforced on where the ball ends. It's moved back 15 yards. I'll let you guys talk about that. Thank you.
I'm not sure if I know what you mean. Yeah, when the ball ends where? What do you mean where the ball ends?
Like say the ball goes out of the end zone. Instead of having it at the 25, it gets moved back to the 10. If they're on
the court,
it's moved back 15 yards from there. Instead of moving the kicker up 15 yards, the ball goes out of the end zone 85% of the time anyways. So, really, you can do a free hit.
They moved the kicker up because, to be honest, they want to take that play out of the game. That, if you remember, Gary, that was the talk. Will they take the kickoff out of the game? They just moved them up so that they can get more kickoffs out of the back of the end zone. And then they moved it up to the 25. But I don't see them moving the kicker back again and trying to enforce those rules just because of the safety issue that they always continue to talk about. The kickoff is a play where so many people get hurt on kickoff. Because you're running downfield full speed and the collisions are truly full speed right there. So I just don't see that happening.
Trying to talk a little bit more today about yesterday's games, the championship games. What was your takeaway from yesterday's games? That is our Twitter poll, and the poll has been up for a couple of hours now. Your biggest takeaway from yesterday's AFC and NFC championship games, 41% of you say you'd walk away from that saying Tom Brady's never out of it. Probably knew that before, but that was reinforced yesterday. 35% of you say Nick Foles, Philadelphia. He's not just a run-of-the-mill backup quarterback. 14% of you say you got another takeaway. Sounds like a lot of those deal with officiating issues. 10% say you saw Belichick show emotion at the end of the game. You're surprised by that. What was your biggest takeaway? Give us a call. The lines are open, 803-0550 and toll-free 1-888-550-2550. You may want to talk about this, Donald, and I think you kind of touched on this a minute ago. The New York Post headline today, and put yourself in the position of a New York fan, you're in there in New York, you're in between New England and you're in between Philadelphia, and your Giants go up against the Eagles and your Jets go up against the Patriots. New York Post back page headline, sports page, worst Super Bowl ever, or at least since 2005 when the Eagles and Patriots played. It goes, Patriots versus Eagles is a New York nightmare. Does that extend to us here in upstate New York? We don't have the Eagles animosity they would have in New York City, but is this, in fact, the worst Super Bowl ever? Maybe you want to comment on that, 803-0550 and toll-free 1-888-550-2550. I'd be reluctant to jump on that and say, yeah, that's true. I will say this. I'm glad it's the last game, the Super Bowl game, because since the Bills lost, I've not been particularly inspired by any of the playoff games that have followed. Obviously, Minnesota's miracle finish was spectacular. Before that game, it was a good game. But I'm ready for the end of the season in 2 weeks. Whether or not this is the worst Super Bowl matchup ever,
it's hard to say.
It's hard to say. You know, the Patriots, where they're used to winning these things, and a team, the Eagles, with a backup quarterback, which goes to our question, or at least the Twitter poll part about Nick Foles, not your average backup. I'm not going to say it's the worst Super Bowl ever. I hope it's a decent game.
The crazy thing is, it could turn out and be a great game, like a crazy great game, and everybody's like, man, and you have some people that are like, I'm not watching that game. That is a terrible matchup. I'm not watching it, even though I think most people watch it anyway.
Yeah.
But the ones who don't will turn the TV on Monday and say,
what was I doing? Like, I could have watched that game. I can't believe I went to sleep on that game. So it could be a great game. I tried to look back at some of the recent Super Bowls. I look back to 2007, the Colts and Bears. I can't remember. You know, obviously Peyton Manning was in that one, but the Bears, they had a good season. I just don't remember how people thought about that matchup.
I can go back just a couple of years. I wasn't particularly excited about the Broncos and Carolina a couple of years ago. I didn't think that was a great matchup going in. And it wasn't a great game when they played it out. It was all Denver defense a couple of years
ago. It was all Denver's defense. And Peyton Manning wasn't the Peyton Manning that we all – what about the Baltimore-San Francisco game going into that one? With Colin Kaepernick and Joe Flacco.
Going into it, I wasn't overly excited. But, I mean, at the time, Kaepernick was kind of an exciting player to watch.
He's since
has bottomed out.
Right.
That one get you excited? I don't know.
I can't remember.
Right.
I don't know why.
It's
not a good sign.
Look, we got the Patriots that people are sick of. We all have, not just Buffalo, we all have Patriot fatigue. Some people take it to the extreme like, well, the league wants the Patriots to win. No, of course not. But we all have Patriots fatigue, right? We're all sick of Brady and Belichick. We all are going to be, pulling our hair out over the Belichick news conference Super Bowl week, right?
Yeah, we will. Because all you're going to see is Patriots stuff. You're not going to hear about the Eagles at all, really. I mean, everything is going to be about the Patriots. You're going to see Brady. You're going to see Belichick. And you're going to see Mr. Kraft. I mean, that's it. That's all they're going to talk about. The night of the game, all you're going to see is Brady this and Kraft this. And he bought the team. I saw yesterday on ESPN, the game was over. I'm like, I'm turning the channel to a movie or something like that. I'm tired of seeing this already. And we got to deal with 2 weeks of it.
Yeah. It's just getting warmed up.
Right.
Worst Super Bowl matchup ever? Maybe you think so. Give us a call, 803-0550. Toll free, 1-888-550-2550. Cesar in California has some thoughts on yesterday's game, I believe. Cesar, go ahead.
Hi, guys. How you guys doing?
Okay.
Yeah. Just kind of a little flashback for earlier this year. I noticed that Kansas City and even a couple weeks ago Miami and the teams that did beat them, I think Carolina was one of them, I noticed that they really didn't adjust after halftime as much as other teams have. And I noticed that if the Jaguars, and like you guys said earlier, when Ramsey came out in the locker room and said how they adjusted, I feel personally what I've noticed is that when teams adjust and they're doing something right the first half and they adjust, it seems like the Patriots, it seems to me that teams will beat the Patriots more if they don't adjust, if they make the Patriots adjust to them, because if it ain't broke, why fix it, right?
Mm-hmm. Well, I mean, in the case of yesterday's game, if you're the Jacksonville Jaguars and you get to halftime, and I'm going to look up the numbers here because the time of possession was pretty dominant in their they had 18 minutes to 11 minutes of possession time. They had the lead over the Patriots. How much are you going to tinker with that if you're the Jacksonville Jaguars, right? What do you want them to adjust at that point?
You
got
to be happy with that.
Well, I mean, not just the Jaguars' defense adjusting, but, I mean, on offense, it seems like they tried to do something else. Like, it seems like they went away from what they were doing. What was working was running, play action, screen. I mean, they were switching it up on offense, and it seems like the second half when they came out, it seems like it just wasn't the same team. They adjusted, and whatever adjustments they made just wasn't working. I mean, they came out pretty dry in the second half. So I feel like they went away from what they were doing, what was working. Whatever adjustments they made, both on offense and defense, just didn't work. And teams that don't do that, for example, Kansas City, when they blew out the Patriots, I know that was, week one, I think, but are still teams that have had success don't really adjust that much, on offense or defense, and just stick to the game plan. And those teams kind of have success against the Patriots.
Yeah. I don't know.
It's so hard, and it'll be interesting to talk to Greg Cosell about this if we get him on later in the week. Because he'll be able to break down and really tell us, did they truly change? Did the Jaguars change what they were doing at halftime? Or how much did the Patriots change? We know the Patriots make changes. And so if you go into a game with a game plan and then the opposing team, who is the Patriots, they make their changes at halftime, they come out in the second half and they're shutting down what you do, you have to make changes at that point. So it would be interesting to talk to Greg and see how he feels they switch things up.
Thanks for your call, Cesar. Let's go to Amos in Rochester. Hello, Amos. You're on the air.
Hello. How are you?
Good.
I was wondering if the Bills should address a quarterback in free agency, someone like Sam Bradford or someone like Kansas City quarterback Alex Smith. You know, get a seasoned vet and then address your needs in the draft. And we have a seasoned quarterback and we have, you know, some good young guys like on the offensive line, defensive line.
Yeah, that's one way to do it, Amos. That's been discussed. It all depends, I think, on where you think this Bills team is. Do we think the Bills are a seasoned veteran quarterback away from true championship contention? I don't.
I think, first of all, I think you have too many free agents. And I think it's not really a good situation that you want to be in. Like, I got this tweet from Brandon Arnold, and it says, Jaguars drafted great over the last 3 to 5 years. It'll be interesting to see who they are able to retain over the next 3 to 5 years. Miles Jack, Jalen Ramsey, Dante Fowler, Cam Robinson, Leonard Fournette, all on rookie deals. That's the situation you want to be in when you have a bunch of these guys all on rookie contracts and you're playing well. The Bills right now had a good season, made it into the playoffs, but you got a lot of free agents. That means you got a lot of older guys on your team. So you need to get younger and you need to draft well.
I read something where the Jaguars have, like, last 5 years, every year they drafted in the top five in the draft.
Yeah.
That's a recipe for success. And now they're on their rookie deal, so they're not costing a lot of money. You're getting premium draft picks.
Right.
Now, you got to be bad to have that going on a regular basis.
Right.
And the Bills don't want to get there, but you got to make the most of those picks. And I just don't know. The Amos question about, you know, I guess I'd really look hard at whatever free agent quarterbacks are out there because I don't want to just add an aging veteran to this roster, which is not – you know, young and needs work in a lot of different places, right? It's not just plug a quarterback in and you're good to go. I think it's a lot more than that.
Yeah, I think you need to have a veteran until you feel – I think you need to draft one, but I think you need to have a veteran there. I don't know if that's Tyrod Taylor, if that's somebody else, who that's going to be. It should be a lot of guys out there as free agents this year, but that would be interesting to see. And we talk about all of this draft capital that they have, but – I mean, they can trade players on draft day as well.
Sure.
They can trade some of the guys that they have on their roster if they want to get up to get a quarterback. Some of these teams that might need a left tackle, well, you got Cordy Glenn.
Yeah.
You know, you have some guys that you can move around and try to get up so that you can pick up a quarterback if that's what you need and not trade away all of your draft picks.
Here's a call from Johnny in Ontario. Hello, Johnny. Welcome.
Murph, how you doing, Mr. Jones? Good afternoon.
Hello.
Good.
I'd just like to thank you guys for the great season that you've had putting on your show, the guests.
Johnny, thank you. Yeah, thank you, Johnny. That's nice. Thanks.
Now, to get back to Belichick and why the Patriots are always there. This is what if they win, it's their sixth Super Bowl in this generation. Mr. Belichick is an alien. He's an extraterrestrial. John Lennon. Elvis, JFK, we'll put him in. That's the only way to explain it. Cheating? Well, like I always said, if you're not cheating, you ain't trying, right?
He's an alien.
Mr. Jones.
Is Brady an alien?
The separation.
What'd you say?
Youngstown State.
That's what I'm talking about, man. That's all that needs to be said right there is Youngstown State. Nothing else.
That's all. I gotta go with Philadelphia this weekend. I would love to be able to say I lived and I saw one NFL team win six Super Bowls in my lifetime because I don't think it'll ever happen again.
No.
But the quarterback coach for the Eagles is my namesake. Mom says we're related. I don't know. He's doing a great job. Thanks for listening.
Okay. Thanks, Johnny.
Yeah.
He's all over the map.
He kind of went a few different directions.
Throughout a Youngstown State, a gratuitous Youngstown State shout-out.
Yeah, for absolutely no reason. I'm having the fans that are calling in today. You guys keep calling in. I'm not feeling too well, and I need some motivation here.
Two topics on the table. Is this the worst Super Bowl matchup ever in your mind? Give us a call on that. And what are your takeaways from yesterday's championship games? The lines are open, 803-0550 and toll-free 1-888-550-2550. Back with more in a moment. The John Murphy Show presented by Napa Auto Parts from One Bills Drive on Buffalo Bills Radio.
We're back with more of the John Murphy Show.
We're back. John Murphy, Donald Jones here until 3 today. Coming up at 2, we're going to turn our focus on the Philadelphia Eagles with Ruben Frank, who covers the Eagles on television in Philadelphia. You know, I forgot to ask Coy. Coy Wire was with us earlier this hour. He grew up in Pennsylvania, I think nearby Philadelphia. I wonder if he's an Eagles fan. What do you think?
He
might be. Eagles fans are a funny bunch, Donald. They have a bad reputation, obviously, for misbehavior.
I mean, did you see him yesterday? I don't know if you
They were fine, weren't they? Were they okay?
No.
Well, what happened?
Just crazy all over the city. Did you see they had the grease up the poles?
Yeah.
So that they wouldn't. They still got found a way to get to the top of the poles.
Is that a thing?
I saw. I guess that's a thing out there. I saw one video of a bunch of people on a bus and this guy running alongside the bus and just wipes out on a pole.
Yeah, I saw that.
I mean, just I'm sure it was crazy out there.
Yeah. Well, how do you think it would be here if the Bills got back to a Super Bowl?
Ooh.
Right? It'd be kind of similar, I would think. Eagles fans are an interesting crew. Here is Isaac in Niagara Falls. Hello, Isaac. Welcome.
Hey, guys. How you doing?
Great.
Good.
Thoughts on this Super Bowl?
Yes, sir.
I'm a lifelong Bills fan. I really thought this was going to be the year we were going to do something. Obviously, I was wrong. But
they went to the playoffs, Isaac, so they did something.
They did do something, and that was the first time I've seen them go to the playoffs in my lifetime.
Mm-hmm.
So I was excited about that, a little disappointed with how that turned out. But as far as this Super Bowl goes, I really like Philly in this one. I like them for the main fact that they're the underdog here. I do not want to see New England take another Super Bowl. I don't think they need it. And I will say this, right? I hate Brady. I hate New England because I am a Buffalo Bills fan. But Brady is a beast. He is undoubtedly one of the best quarterbacks of all time. That being said, I still want to see him lose.
Yeah, I think, Isaac, you are a, I guess, a true fan, but also a realist. Let's just say that. I mean, you understand that, yeah, you're here in Buffalo, so you don't like him. And to be honest with you, I don't care if you're here in Buffalo, if you're out in L.A. and you're a Rams fan. You don't like Brady and the Patriots.
It's funny. It's kind of like a nationwide thing. It's not just in Buffalo, you know, because everybody's sick of seeing the Patriots win, man.
Right, exactly. Everybody's sick of seeing them win. But you have to give credit where it's due, and that dude is a beast up there. We've seen him over, especially here in Buffalo, you've seen him over and over and over make crazy fourth quarter comebacks. How many times has he done it in the playoffs? He did it last year in the Super Bowl. Now, it wasn't just him. He had guys making plays all around him. But Then you see it again yesterday in the game, and it's like, this dude is just unreal.
He is. You know, you want to fail. You want to see him mess up a little bit, but he just, you know, he never gives you that.
Right.
What do we make of the thanks very much for your call there, Isaac. The hand injury, Donald, it was heavily dissected, reported, people trying to get looks at it. I had people stopping me in restaurants Saturday. Do you think he's really hurt? I think it's a smokescreen. I said, of course he's really hurt. But it wasn't. I will say this, too, and I watched that game pretty closely. There were a couple of throws where I thought Brady sort of floated it, especially early on, and just caused me to wonder if.
Deep throws down the field?
Yeah. Even yep. Shorter ones. Caused me to wonder if maybe he didn't get a good grip because of the injury and the tape, you know, the tape that went around his thumb, right, from the backside to the front side.
Did you see
– and then there were other throws where you're like, oh, he's fine.
Yeah, he's fine.
He's okay.
And obviously they kept zooming in on his hand. I mean, it was like the Brady Hand show. Did you see Bill Belichick in his press conference? They were asking him about the injury, and he's like, you know, Brady did a good job. He's tough. He did a good job of getting out here and gutting it out for us. Then he's like, come on, we're not talking about – heart surgery here.
Right. Well, anybody who didn't see it, we have it for you. Bill Belichick asked yesterday about Brady's hand injury and playing with that hand injury, and here's what he said.
Bill, did anything have to change game plan-wise because of Brady's hand?
Not that I'm aware of, Bob.
Can you just speak to the resourcefulness of Tom dealing with something like that midweek and then coming out and playing a huge game like that?
I mean, look, Tom did a great job, and he's a tough guy. We all know that, all right? But I mean, I'm not talking about open-heart surgery here.
Is that what you were talking about?
Yeah, exactly. I'm not talking about open-heart surgery. So, you know, I expect him to get out there and do – you ever think that, you know, he actually wants to answer some things up there, but he's created this persona of him at the podium where he has to stay like this because he's been like this for so long. But there are probably some questions he like, you know what, in his mind, I can answer that one and get a good laugh out right now. But he just doesn't.
It's always funny to see how the New England media, they hit on something that Belichick wants to talk about, and then they go back to it over. Like somebody asked him about special teams a couple of weeks ago.
Yeah.
So now every press conference with Belichick, somebody will ask him about the opponent's special teams. For whatever reason, he's okay talking about that.
They probably gang up like in a bar somewhere, and they just huddle up and, hey, guys, what questions can we ask him so we can get something out of him?
Yeah. I just need 15-second soundbite. Tom Brady was asked about his hand after the game yesterday. The Patriots, a future Hall of Fame quarterback, talked about dealing with a hand injury all week long.
Yeah, it's pretty never had anything like it. Well, I've had a couple crazy injuries, but this was pretty crazy. And they come up and you just deal with them, and I wasn't quite sure how I was going to do, on Wednesday night, and then Thursday. Wasn't sure, and then Friday gained a little confidence, and then Saturday was trying to figure out what we could do, and Sunday try to come out here and make it happen. So I just want the guys to we all put a lot out there, and I mean this was a little injury at the end of the day. It's certainly a big part of what a quarterback does. I mean I've had a lot worse injuries than this, but if this was on my left hand I could care less, but it's based on where it was, and we had to deal with it. Yeah, I wasn't sure on Wednesday. I certainly didn't think I thought out of all the plays, my season can't end on a handoff in practice. We didn't come this far to end on a handoff. And just one of those things. And so I came in the training room and just, was looking at my hand and wasn't quite sure what happened, but everyone did a great job kind of getting me ready, and the training staff and the doctors and Alex, and it was a great team effort. So without that, I definitely wouldn't be playing.
And so ends the hand injury. So what,
what happened, though?
I think what happened, by all reports, and I don't know if they've ever clarified it, he banged his, on a handoff, banged his the back of his thumb, his throwing hand thumb, on the chin strap buckle of Rex Burkhead. And took some stitches. How many stitches? Some people say 12. Some people say 5. Hmm. Probably somewhere in the middle.
Gotcha.
But there's no confirmation of that. But that apparently people have cobbled together. That's kind of what happened. On the back of his thumb, you can see the tape, the black tape that went around to the front of his thumb. On some level, that tape was going to have contact with the ball bit, right? So there were a couple of throws yesterday where I thought, huh, I wonder if that, it was due to that. Now, there were a couple of others where I thought, huh, Brady.
Brady. Just threw a dart.
Yeah, right.
And he was dropping some dimes.
Yeah.
I mean, even passes that weren't caught, it was like, man. And Romo's like, that was a crazy throw there.
Yeah.
So I know earlier, a couple weeks ago, I think this was right after they lost to the Dolphins, and we had Chris Brown on, and he was talking about how, he felt like his arm is getting weaker.
Yeah. I wish. Don't see it. Don't see it happening. All right, we're going to break. Top of the hour. We're going to have an update in a second, and then we're going to talk about the Eagles a little bit. Reuben Frank, who covers that team in Philadelphia, will be joining us when we come back. We want to hear more from you, your takeaways from yesterday's championship game, and is this, in fact, the worst Super Bowl matchup of all time? Let us know what you think. 803-0550 and toll-free 1-888-550-2550. The John Murphy Show, presented by Napa Auto Parts on Buffalo Bills Radio.
Radio Network Sports Update.
Update from One Bills Drive, where the Bills are quiet, but the Super Bowl matchup is set. Philadelphia Eagles and the New England Patriots. And the odds makers in Las Vegas have made the Eagles the biggest Super Bowl underdog since 2009. At least a 5.5-point underdog to the New England Patriots. Patriots looking for their second straight Super Bowl title, their third in the last four seasons. The betting favorite has won 33 of the previous 51 Super Bowls. Kickoff is February 4th at U.S. Bank Stadium in Minneapolis. The Patriots and the Philadelphia Eagles. Jaguars players who lost yesterday's AFC Championship game say they're not happy with the imbalance in penalties in that game. The Jags were called for 6 penalties for 98 yards, including 2 big pass interference calls. Patriots were flagged just 1 time for 10 yards. A.J. Boye, cornerback for the Jacksonville Jaguars, said a lot of stuff that made no sense was going on as far as the officiating was concerned. This is Senior Bowl week. The game coming up on Saturday in Mobile, Alabama. Practices start tomorrow in Mobile. The eyes of the league and all the personnel people, scouts, and even some coaching staffs will be on Mobile for the 2018 Reese's Senior Bowl this week. More than 100 of the top seniors and fourth-year juniors who graduated in their college class will draw heavy contingents of front office executives. The Bills sending head coach Sean McDermott down there along with GM Brandon Bean and offensive coordinator Brian Daboll. The three of them will meet with the media tomorrow in Mobile, and we'll have coverage of that coming up tomorrow and Wednesday. Our man Chris Brown standing by to cover the Senior Bowl for us starting tomorrow in Mobile, Alabama. Around the NFL, coaching news, Vikings offensive coordinator Pat Shurmur expected to be named head coach of the New York Giants this week, maybe as soon as tomorrow. A deal could be done by tomorrow. Shurmur available now after the Vikings lost in the NFC title game. Dick LeBeau reportedly is out as the defensive coordinator for the Tennessee Titans. Titans have gone with Mike Vrabel as their head coach, and he is not bringing LeBeau. He's not keeping LeBeau on his staff, and the Sabres play tonight in Calgary. That is the update from One Bills Drive. John Murphy and Donald Jones coming to you from our One Buffalo studio. The Super Bowl matchup is set, as we said. Heavy underdogs, the Philadelphia Eagles. Joining us on the Subway Fresh Take Hotline right now, a man who has covered the Eagles for more than 30 years. He is a sports talk host on WIP Radio in Philadelphia and covers the Eagles for NBC Sports in Philadelphia. Happy to have Ruben Frank on the line with us. Ruben, it's John Murphy and Donald Jones up here in Buffalo. Thanks very much for joining us here today. We appreciate it.
Yeah, it's great to be with you guys. And LeSean McCoy was at both Eagles playoff games supporting his former team, so that was good to see.
Shady, where is he? Up in a booth somewhere? Is he with Chip Kelly, or where is he watching a game?
No, he's in the stands with his people. Yeah,
oh, yeah.
Wow, he's out in the stands.
He's
huh?
a man of the people.
Yeah. Hey, he's a common man.
What's the deal with Crisco on the light poles? I've never heard of that before. Is that a common thing in Philadelphia?
I've never heard of that before either. Yeah. I thought it was a joke. It kind of makes sense. I guess they were worried people were going to climb up there and do their thing. So, yeah, it makes sense. Very creative community policing, I guess.
How crazy was last night, though, Ruben?
Yeah, it was wild. And this city is just so starving for something to get behind. And this team is so easy to like. It's a really likable team. It's not a team of stars. It's just a team of, 53 guys who are kind of late round draft picks and undrafted guys and guys jettisoned by their former teams. They didn't want them. And so it's a team that I think people can really relate to. And certainly the kinship between the team and the fans is stronger than any team I've seen here. And they've had some really good teams, but never anything like this. And so there's just a certain joy in the stands and a certain, bond between the fans and the team. It's just like the fans relate to these players and the players relate to the fans, and it's kind of a unique thing.
Hey, Ruben, I want to ask you about the team, but I got one more question about the fans. I happen to think that Philadelphia Eagles fans get a bad rap. All the jokes about Santa Claus and snowballs, et cetera, but those are avid fans. I mean, they're eager, avid fans who've supported that team pretty consistently over the years, right?
Yeah, they're great fans. And, there's the national media likes those tired, stale narratives. The Santa Claus, it was like 60 years ago, and the dude was drunk, and he was,
Who's Santa?
What? Yeah, he was. And, snowball. I mean, things happen. I've been in every stadium in the league, and stuff happens. When you have, 80,000 people congregating in one place, they're not all going to be choir boys. That's just the reality. People tend to drink at football games. And, I've seen stuff happen in San Diego and in Seattle and everywhere. So I think these are, you can find exceptions everywhere. I think fans are the same everywhere. They love their team. They get behind their team. And there's always going to be, somebody when you have that many people who causes trouble.
Hey, Ruben, now you're talking about the fans, and I'm sure the city was crazy last night. And I'm from New Jersey, so I've heard a lot about Philly fans. But
whereabouts in New Jersey are you from?
I'm from Plainfield, New Jersey, so right by Rutgers, by Newark area. So
right by Malcolm Jenkins' hometown of Piscataway.
Well, yeah, definitely. Piscataway, New Jersey is actually where I reside in Buffalo, but Piscataway, New Jersey as well. So, yeah, I know Malcolm. We grew up together and played against each other a lot. But anyway, so
now, did you know that South Plainfield, Plainfield, and North Plainfield are all in different counties?
Yeah, I do know that as well. Union,
isn't
Somerset,
that good information?
And Middlesex. That
is, you're not getting that information from anybody. You
know? and it's not, they're all right next to each other, but different counties. It's interesting. I forgot.
It's not
what,
that interesting, by the way.
I forgot
really
my
not
question
that interesting.
Now.
You know,
I'm sorry.
Murph's a hater.
I'm not really a hater. I just on the information entertainment scale, you know, the counties of New Jersey is not, you know, my favorite Jeopardy category.
It's not his favorite Jeopardy.
I apologize.
Category.
No, that's all right. It's not you. It's Mr. Jersey over here. I think you were going
to
ask a question.
I was about to ask you about Nick Foles and the excitement around Nick Foles being the quarterback heading into the Super Bowl against the Patriots.
Yeah, just hearing you say that, it's crazy. I mean, here's a guy who got benched for Case Keenum, oddly enough, 2 years ago with the Rams. Played one game backing up Alex Smith last year for the Chiefs. Comes here, backs up an MVP, doesn't play all year. Next thing you know, he's in the playoffs. I mean, it's an incredible story. And he's just gotten more and more comfortable over the last 5 or 6 weeks since Carson got hurt in early December. And you could just see it. You could just see him kind of getting back to the Nick Foles, who was a Pro Bowler and a first-team All-Pro in 2013. And last night, didn't come out of the blue for him. He'd never played with these guys. He'd never played with Torrey Smith or Alshon Jeffrey. He missed most of training camp with an elbow injury, so he hadn't even practiced with these guys. So it was going to take some time. And it was ugly there for a while. That Raiders game was ugly. But they won it, and now that's the thing about Nick. He's every week he's done enough to win the game, and you know he got some better weather last night. He had a little more chemistry on the deep ball, got great protection. They ran the ball well, and everything just fell into place. And we've seen him have these games before. I sat there in Oakland when he threw 7 touchdowns against the Raiders at Alameda County Stadium, and I mean he's had games with 5 touchdowns, with 4 touchdowns when he's on. He's really, really good. He's just been inconsistent. And so we've seen this Nick Foles before. When he gets into a rhythm, I mean, he's almost unstoppable. And that's what happened last night. He's been through a lot. He almost retired after the 2015 season. He was so unhappy and lost his love for the game. And here he is 2 years later, and he's starting the Super Bowl. It's a crazy story.
Now, I know when Carson Wentz went out, my immediate thought process is the Eagles are done. And I think people really forget that it's not just a quarterback. Even though Carson Wentz is very good and it was having an MVP type of season, the defense is good. They have a very strong run game. They have some weapons in the passing game. I know I thought it was done. What was the feeling around the city of Philadelphia when Carson Wentz went down?
Yeah, a lot of fans jumped off the bandwagon. And it was a little surprising because, like you said, it's not just about the quarterback. As good as he is, you don't go 13-3 with one guy. And I wrote a story that day, the next day after he got hurt in L.A., saying, you know, this is still a Super Bowl team. And because it's about the team. And the strength of this team is the team. It's not one person. And it's easy to forget that. I mean, this is the ultimate team game. And, I mean, I've seen this team go, you know, Donovan got hurt 1 year and they had, you know, Jeff Garcia come in and went 6-1, and another year he got hurt, and AJ Feely won 3 straight games. So it's all about how the team plays, and this team just really responded. Everybody kind of raised their game a little, and Nick did enough, and you know kept the thing rolling. But I guess it's natural for fans to kind of lose faith when your MVP gets hurt. But you know they. They rallied around Nick, and he played well enough to keep the thing going.
Around the line with Ruben Frank, who is the Eagles reporter for NBC Sports in Philadelphia. And one more question about Nick Foles. And I know there's the big game coming up in a couple of weeks, but what does the future hold for him? And is his future in Philadelphia, would you think, Ruben?
It's a great question. And I think it's one that is going to be obviously put off for a little while, but I know he wants to start. I know there's teams out there who could use Nick Foles. When you see how he played last night, he's better than a lot of starting quarterbacks in the league. So do the Eagles trade him to a team that's looking for a quarterback with Super Bowl experience, or does he want to stay here and back up Carson Wentz? I think it's going to come down to what the Eagles are offered. If somebody offers them a first-round pick, you can't turn that down for your backup quarterback as terrific as he's played. You know, Carson Wentz is your future. He's your MVP. And Nick is not going to start as long as Carson's here and he's healthy. By the same token, what if you're in the same position in 2 years and Carson gets hurt and your backup is, you know, I don't want to, you know, mention any names, but we've seen really bad backups over the years. So it's a interesting call. Nick wants to start, and I think he'll have that opportunity at some point in the future. But, you know, right now he's he understands his role here, and as long as he's here and Carson's healthy, Carson's going to play.
I have to imagine, Ruben, that his value, if he's able to go into this Super Bowl and beat Tom Brady and the Patriots, his value will just shoot through the roof at that point.
I would think maybe. I'm thinking a 1 and a 3. if they win this game, I mean, he's still a young guy. Mm-hmm. He's in his sixth year. He's healthy. I'll tell you what, if he does that, even if they lose and he plays really well, I think it might be hard for the Eagles to keep him.
Hmm. There are some teams, including one about 150 yards away from where we sit,
right,
that has a 1 and a 3, right? They have extra ones and
right,
threes.
Exactly.
Hey, Ruben, obviously Doug Peterson, the head coach, done a great job getting that offense together. But what role, if any, has Frank Reich played in both Carson Wentz's early career success and what Nick Foles has done this year?
Yeah, great question. And, you know, Frank was just talking about Frank doesn't talk about the comeback very often, but he's mentioned it with the guys here, and it's kind of, you know, when they're up, you know, 31-7, his message is, you know, I've been on the other side,
yeah,
of that where we've come back. So, but you know, he's not calling the plays, but he's integral in installation and crafting the game plan, and you know, hands on with the quarterbacks. And you know, he's done a really good job, and I'll tell you what, I would, considering what this offense has done, especially since Carson got hurt, without real superstars, I would think he would be a valid head coaching candidate. He comes across really well, as you guys know, in interviews, and he's very smart, really knows the game. He's a great motivator, and yeah, I'm a big fan of Frank's. I think he's done a great job.
What is the strongest asset that Doug Peterson brings to the job as head coach?
I think the one thing he's really done that his predecessor didn't do is he lets these guys be themselves, and he lets them show their personality. It's manifested in the touchdown celebrations and locker room speeches, and he just gives them a lot of room to be themselves. And I think a lot of these guys aren't used to that. You know, the guys who've had coaches that are micromanagers and really controlling and want the team to behave and act a certain way. He says, as long as you don't get a penalty, I don't care what you do. Just be yourself, have fun. And I think what that does is it gives you a really loose team. I mean, they were so loose going into that game last night, and it showed. They just went out and had fun. And, you know, there's videos of them dancing in the locker room before the game and just, you know, having fun and listening to music. And when you're tense or you're, you know, when you're not loose, it's hard to go out and play the way you're capable of. And he's really created an atmosphere and a culture where these guys just go out and have fun. They're themselves. They act like themselves. They're not trying to fit a mold of how they're supposed to act because the coach wants them to. And it gives them the opportunity to be at their best. And that's something that's really come naturally to Doug. And I think it's made a huge difference.
Hey, Ruben, I read somewhere, and I believe I heard this on the broadcast yesterday, they had the entire team under contract except for, like, two guys. I mean, if that's true, how much excitement is there for this team moving forward?
Yeah, I mean, the main guys that they could lose are Nigel Bradham, he's been playing great, linebacker, and Trey Burton, who's, like, second or third tight end. Everybody's under contract. They re-signed a couple of the guys who had signed one-year deals, so they're in great shape, and they're not going away. And I think that's the difference between this team and other Eagles teams that have had success over the last decade. And this thing is built to last. They're not going anywhere. And Carson just turned 25, I think, and you know, most of their really good players are young and in their prime. So I think when you look at the quarterback situation in the NFL, the best quarterbacks, you know, Rivers and Roethlisberger and Eli and Brady, and I mean, you go right down the list, these guys are all in their mid-30s, late 30s, and Eagles have a kid who's at that level already. And if they continue surrounding him with the kind of talent that they have, they're just going to keep winning football games.
Hey, Ruben, I would think that looking back to last August, the Eagles feel pretty good about acquiring Ronald Darby in exchange for Jordan Matthews, right? That trade worked out for them.
Yeah, I'm a big Jordan Matthews fan. I know he's been hurt. I think he's going to, when he's healthy, he's going to play really well up there. He's a great kid. Well, you guys know him. He's awesome. But, yeah, I think Darby's a guy that he's a risk taker, as you know. And, you know, when he makes big plays, he's going to give up a couple of big plays. But they have a lot of good young cornerbacks. It's going to be interesting to see how it all sorts out. But, yeah, they're happy with Darby. And, you know, he missed a lot of the season and gave him a chance to look at Rasul Douglas, a rookie second-round pick who played pretty well. But, you know, Darby has that speed. I believe he ran 21-17 for the 200 meters at the World Junior Championships. It gives him just this world-class sprinting speed. And when he gets his hands on the ball, I mean, you're thinking 6 points. So he's an exciting player.
Hey, Ruben, another guy who was here is actually from here now playing with the Eagles, Corey Graham. I'm not sure if too many people actually realize that he was with the Eagles, but yesterday he made a few plays. How much has he contributed to that locker room and to that team on the field?
Yeah, I'm glad you asked about Corey. He's one of my favorite guys on this team, and he's really kind of quickly emerged into a real leader on that defense. And, you know, it's a young group of cornerbacks and a veteran group of safeties with Malcolm Jenkins and Ronnie McLeod and Corey. And, you know, Corey's won a Super Bowl. He's been in the league a long time. He takes great care of himself. He's a real pro. And I think that's kind of rubbed off on all the young D-backs. And he's made plays. I mean, he's played really well as a third safety. And when Rodney missed a couple games middle of the season, he came right in and did a good job. And he's just a quality guy. And he's kind of like everybody on this team that, you know, he was unwanted somewhere. He wasn't even in a training camp. You know, he wasn't even in camp with anybody. And once he got here, he fit right into that culture, and he's been a big addition. And, you know, they made a point of bringing in guys who had won, who were winners, whether it was Torrey Smith with the Ravens, you know, Corey Graham, LeGarrette and Chris Long had both won Super Bowls with the Patriots. You know, all those kind of pieces help fit together into what they have now.
Last thing I have for you, Ruben, what's the recent history like between the Eagles and the New England Patriots? And what do you think about the fact that the Eagles are underdogs? They're probably comfortable at this point, huh?
Yeah, I mean, at this point, I think they would rather be underdogs. You know, that's kind of their mantra now.
Yeah.
I don't know why they were underdogs against the Vikings. I thought they were clearly the better team going in, but especially in their own stadium. But I'm not a Las Vegas odds maker. I don't know how that works. But, you know, they went up to Foxborough and beat them in 2000. In 2015, I think it might have been Chip Kelly's last win as Eagles head coach before Pat Shurmur, of all people, replaced him as interim coach. They went up somehow and beat the Patriots late in that 2015 season. But obviously, you know, the 2004 Super Bowl is the game that everyone remembers. And, you know, who knows what Belichick was doing, legal or illegal, before that game. but, you know, it was a great game. Donovan actually played really well in that game, threw three touchdowns, and it was a 3-point game. And, you know, I think there's a few million people in the Philadelphia area that would certainly like to avenge that one.
Hey, Ruben, as we're talking about underdogs, all I saw on Twitter was these underdog or these dog masks and these costumes.
Yeah.
I mean, are you seeing that a lot now throughout the city?
Yeah, I just saw a bus driver wearing one of them. A little disturbing.
You don't want that. You don't want to see that.
You know how these people are.
Yeah. The bus driver's going to slam into a Crisco-covered light pole or something.
Exactly. It's giving everybody something to latch onto, and I think they cleaned out Amazon in like 40 minutes of all the masks. And it's a fun thing. Chris Long and Lane Johnson started it after the Atlanta game. They had smuggled the masks out on the field. Actually, Jason Peters had them hidden in his coat, and then as soon as the game was over, see, he had instructions if they lost to just throw them out, but they won the game, and Chris Long and Lane Johnson put them on, and kind of started a fashion trend here.
Yeah, pretty cool. It sounds like they're having fun. Enjoy the ride, Ruben. You're going to have fun, I know, the next few weeks. We thank you for spending a couple of minutes with us today.
Anytime, guys. Good
Thanks.
Talking to you.
Ruben Frank covers the Eagles for NBC Sports in Philadelphia, host on WIP Radio in Philly. He's covered the Eagles for over 30 years, and he joined us on the Subway Fresh Take Hotline. Subway, eat fresh. They're going to have fun. There's a team to root for, Donald.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, as if Buffalo fans needed somebody to root for in this game against the Patriots. That's a fun team to root for. There are some connections there. Corey Graham. I've always been a Nigel Bradham fan. Ronald Darby, okay, he plays down there. Frank Reich. There's your team, Buffalo. There's your team.
There's
your,
I mean,
Eagles.
Every city around this country are rooting for the
yes.
Eagles.
Yeah, probably.
the Patriots are playing, you're rooting against the Patriots. You know? So it's. I wonder if, like, Cowboys, Redskins, Giants fans are rooting for the Eagles.
Yeah. Well, no, not the Giants, especially not the Giants or the others. We're going to break. We're going to get back to the phones with you. Do you think how does this Super Bowl matchup sound to you? Is it the worst matchup that you've seen in a while for a Super Bowl? Let us know what you think. And also give us your final take, your final thoughts on yesterday's championship games, your takeaways from that game. The phone line's open, 803-0550, and toll-free 1-888-552-550. The John Murphy Show presented by Napa Auto Parts. We are live at One Bills Drive. This is Buffalo Bills Radio.
We're back with more of the John Murphy Show.
Yes, we're here until 3 today. You're welcome to call us, 803-0550, and toll-free 1-888-552-550. Good talking with Ruben Frank about the Eagles. I think we should adopt the Eagles, Donald. I think over the next 13 days, we should change out the whole set, everything behind us, all the Bills logos, Green. And become an Eagles
Can we
show.
Can we get some dog masks?
Yeah, people might say that's an upgrade.
Put some dog masks on. And,
I just, you know what, I'm just hearing Ruben Frank talk about that team and Merrill Reese last week, and there are so many connections, coaching staff. What's wrong with the Eagles? Tell me. What's wrong with the Eagles? What's wrong with the Philadelphia Eagles? What can you not like about the Eagles?
I don't think there's anything you can't like. The one thing that we just don't know is how Nick Foles is going to play. It's the same thing with – I mean, not that he's as bad as Blake Bortles. I think Blake Bortles is just – but Blake Bortles had a good game yesterday.
Yeah.
But I think Nick Foles, if he plays like he did last night, then those guys have a very good chance. They have a very good running game with the two running backs in Jay Ajayi and LeGarrette Blount. They have receivers out there in Aguilar and Torrey Smith and the kid that came over from Chicago.
Yeah, Alshon Jeffery.
Yeah, Alshon Jeffery. They have some weapons outside, and their defense is a strong defense. They got strong corners that make plays, physical defense. We all know about Fletcher Cox up the middle. So, I mean, there's nothing really that you can't like about those guys. It's all going to come down to the quarterback and how does he play in the big moment. Does he tense up in the big moment, throw some interceptions? Does he make the big mistake? Even the head coach, you know, the coaching staff, do they now tense up as we've seen so many coaching staffs do in the past playing the Patriots? We talked about, you know, Doug Marrone and what they did in terms of play calling yesterday, snapping the ball with 10, 12 seconds left on the clock when you should really be running that thing down to 1-2 seconds left, then snap it. You probably got scared because they got to delay a game. Like, we're going to snap it with 20 seconds left. We're not going to get close again. But does that coaching staff tense up and not just be loose? Like, we've heard.
Well, they had a big game yesterday, and they didn't tense up.
They did. They did.
They fell behind early yesterday and still were cool with it.
And things are just so much different when you play the Patriots. They put so much pressure on you because you know that team does not make mistakes. And so you end up making mistakes, trying not to make a mistake. I mean, that's how it happens.
Here's a call from Rob in Niagara Falls. Hello, Rob. You're on the air.
Hey, guys. Thanks for taking the call.
Sure.
I'm just thinking it could be a good matchup because, you know, I think it'll be fun to see a rematch from 04.
Mm-hmm.
And I think Nick Foles, you know, he played pretty well against a good Vikings defense, and New England's defense isn't anything special. Mm-hmm. And, Donald pretty much said everything I was going to say when it comes to the Eagles receivers, and they have a pretty good offense. And it'll be a good game, but, yeah, it depends on Foles, and I think Foles is a little underrated in this game.
Right. He might be underrated. Now, here's another thing, and we all know yesterday was a little bit out of character for the Patriots. Now, you hear so many times, and Brady will come back from down in the fourth quarter. He's done it so many times in the playoffs. What happens in this Super Bowl? Because the Patriots have the ability to go up early in the game. So if they go up, let's just say 14-0, can Nick Foles now bring them back? Or does the coaching staff get away from that run game? Is their run game is a staple of their offense. Do they get away from that? Do they stick to what they do best? That's the biggest question. Does Nick Foles tense up? Can he bring that team back? That's why it's so hard when you're playing against the Patriots, because they will do things like score going into halftime. They get the ball out at half, and then they score again in the, you know, their first possession in the third quarter. You found yourself down 14 points, and now you're pressing and throwing the ball all over the yard trying to come back or something like that. So it'll be an interesting game. As much as I say it's a horrible matchup, I'm still going to watch it because it's the last game of the year, and we won't have football for a long time. But I think it really comes down to Nick Foles.
Jim in Lakeview. Hello, Jim. Welcome. You're on the air.
Yeah. Hi, guys. My observation, I was looking forward to what I wanted to see in the Pats game was how Doug Marrone was going to attack offensively. You know, there's this thing that has been repeated on your show and a lot of national shows, that there's the strategy when you go up against a great quarterback, the plan should be to run the ball, control the ball, keep him on the bench, keep him off the field. But the analytics folks will tell you that that's overwhelmingly a losing strategy. And in fact, the last game that the Patriots lost in the last month and a half was to the Dolphins, who completely threw that philosophy out the window and had Cutler throwing the ball. So I was pleasantly surprised to see Marrone come out and throw the ball quite a bit in the first half, especially on first down. And it wasn't the Buffalo Bills kind of passing on first down. It was play action where the ball was actually going down the field and not 2 or 3 yard passes, which are, to me, are much better than a run. And he had a lot of success. In fact, it was clear that the passing game set up the running game in the first half, and it was a successful offense. But I knew that Doug Marrone would revert to form, and it started at the end of the first half. 52 seconds to go, 2 timeouts. He's got the ball at the 26. He's going to sit on it, and he's going to take a knee, and he's not even going to go for it. Second half, he's got a lead. He goes into a complete shell. The last 3 possessions, they ran the ball up the middle on first down for a total of 2 yards on those 3 carries. First down, 1 yard carry, 1 yard gain, no gain. So they left their quarterback in second and third long, and it was a classic case of Marrone trying to sit on the lead, protect the lead with the running game. It backfired like it always had, like it did in Buffalo. And the thing about this strategy, you'll get Marrone, McDermott, they'll tell you the same thing. Turnovers are everything. Win the turnover battle, win the game. Well, that's true, but there is an exception to that. When you play as conservative as McDermott or Marrone play offensively, that stat is turned on its head. So once again, and this happened to Marrone many times, Buffalo Bills, his team wins the turnover battle, and he loses the game. And it's a function of a way too conservative a game plan. He took his foot off the pedal. He handed that game to the Patriots on a silver platter just by not allowing his team to compete offensively the way they did in the first half.
Pretty good argument there, Jim. I don't know if I'm totally buying it, but I do agree with you that they had the lead. They're like, okay, we got the lead. We got them down by a couple of scores here. Let's you know, back off a little bit. And they clearly did that, and it did not work to their benefit.
I've never liked when coaches did that. I don't want you to get out here and throw it all around, but you can't get – ultra conservative, especially playing that team, and you know this quarterback can bring them back. You know it. You know that they can bring them back. So if you want to be predictable, we're going to just run, and end up in third and long. Now you got to pass it and punt and rely on our defense. How many times do you think your defense is going to be able to shut down this Patriots offense? It doesn't. That is a very good team over there with players that have been in this position so many times, with the quarterback that has been in this position so many times. You can't, and you got a bunch of young players on your defense. You can't just rely on those guys and give the ball back time after time after time again. And then add on top of it, you totally switched up your defense, which is the reports coming out of the Jacksonville players. So now those guys are playing zone, which they don't even like to play. They like to play man. They like to be physical. But probably because you had a couple of penalties earlier in the game, now you want to switch it up because you don't want to just go man-to-man and possibly get a penalty or something like that. I mean, you can't go ultra conservative. You will lose.
They got the lead by running the ball, though, and being physical, running the ball.
Right.
Jaguars did.
Right.
So, and again, I'm only playing devil's advocate here. I happen to agree with what the caller was saying to a certain extent, not maybe to the extent that he took it. But if you got the lead running the football, being physical, overpowering at the line of scrimmage, you know, Leonard Fournette, heavy dose of Leonard Fournette, why would you get away from that? I mean, why would you go away from that? You know, I'm looking here at their second series, their second touchdown series. Leonard Fournette 13-yard run. Leonard Fournette up the middle 4-yard run.
Right.
Blake Bortles short pass for 8 yards. The one deep pass to Hearns 27 yards. But it was kind of a nice mix. It wasn't you know that they were throwing it all over and built that lead. They mixed it up in those first two possessions. I thought first half offensively, I thought Jacksonville was masterful. Right. I thought Nathaniel Hackett did a great job in play calling and design of what they wanted to do.
How many times have we seen a team in the first half look great against the Patriots,
mm-hmm.
offensively or defensively? Then when they go in at halftime and they make their adjustments, they come out totally different in the second half. And then they're shutting you down, and what you've been doing in the first half, they shut that down, and now they're forcing you to do something else, and it doesn't work out for you. I mean, you see it all the time. You see it in the regular season. You see it in the postseason. That's why you need to have a complete team. And the issue with the Jaguars is they don't have the complete confidence in Blake Bortles.
Would you?
I wouldn't.
Neither would I.
But at the and I get it why you have the confidence in your defense, but you also got to understand you're up 20-10. It's not like you're up 31 points or something like that like the Eagles were. You're only up by two scores, a touchdown and a field goal on a team that notoriously comes back in the second half. And so you need to still get first downs, at least run the play clock down to 2 seconds. Move the ball, get first down so that you can continue to run the clock. But if you go run, and then got a pass on third and long, they can shut that down. And now you end up punting it back to that team. And ultimately, you're not going to shut them down time after time again, even without Gronk.
I think you just hit on something that may go to explain why Jaguars played it the way they did. Yeah, part of it is Marone's natural conservative tendencies. The other thing is he's watched Blake Bortles all year. He's thinking, I don't want that guy having this game. We got a nice lead here.
Yeah.
I'm not going to put it in his hands to blow it for us.
That's tough.
Mean, is that conservative or is that smart? I don't know. A little bit of both, I guess.
That's why we had the was it a Twitter poll last week? And we were talking about your quarterback. You know, does a quarterback consistently win Super Bowls for you? It was something like this, along those lines. Yeah. And having
like kind of non-elite quarterback go deep in the playoffs,
right?
Which is what Bortles is. I think we'd all agree.
Yeah, he's a non-elite quarterback. And can you have a consistently winning team with a non-elite quarterback? I don't think so. I think you need an elite quarterback. Now, we all know you can win in the playoffs with great defense and a strong running game, but there can come a point where if your quarterback is non-elite, they can shut you down.
Mm-hmm.
They can put 8 in the box, and I don't care if you're Leonard Fournette. You can't run into a brick wall every single time and think that at some point we're going to break through. Nah, you wear down too. And so them not having that elite quarterback is really what showed up yesterday. Not having the trust in that quarterback is what showed up yesterday.
And this has to be said too. It was, a 4-point margin at the end.
Mm-hmm.
Jacksonville is one play away, and I'm talking about the Stephon Gilmore swatting away the ball, one play away from getting downfield and perhaps winning that thing.
Mm-hmm.
It was that close. It wasn't as if, you know, Marone got conservative, Jaguars went into a shell, and they got steamrolled. No, Patriots came back, as they often do, with the greatest quarterback of this generation.
I saw somebody tweet, Stephon Gilmore just he just earned his entire contract in that one play.
Yeah, might have.
I'm like, you know what? That's true. I mean, you made the huge play to get them to the Super Bowl. Because that was a great throw.
It was a pretty good throw.
I mean, not great. It was a pretty good throw. Yeah, I mean,
you would wish it was 6 inches, a little bit 6 inches further.
Yeah, but, I mean, it was a pretty good throw. And Stephon did a good job in trailing and jumping up, hanging up in the air and swatting that thing down. You know, so it's a great way for him, for Stephon, to really silence any doubters that he's had this year.
And he's had them.
Oh, yeah.
For good
because
reason.
He had early in the season, he was not having a good season. And then they got things together. And now he is the one that makes the big play to really seal the deal for that team to get to the Super Bowl.
It was a good game. Here is Jason calling from Orchard Park. Jason has a unique perspective. You were at that game in Foxborough, Jason, last night?
Yeah.
What were you doing down there? Why are you down there?
Well, we went to the Jacksonville Bills game. I went to the Patriots Titans game, and then we decided to go back.
You are a true fan, Jason.
Marcel down there. We had our Bills gear on.
Oh, okay.
Marcel played well yesterday, I thought.
Yeah, I mean, unfortunately, he got hurt at the end, but he had to go back in.
Yeah. What's your take? What do you think of the game last night, yesterday?
I mean, I think Doug Marrone blew it.
Really?
I mean, they had the game won. He just went, you know, conservative Marrone on us.
I'm not prepared to say that, Jason.
I don't know.
The first 3.5 quarters was complete silence.
You mean in the stands?
Yeah.
In
the stands.
Doug Marrone blew it. Is that a thing? Do you think he blew it yesterday, Donald? Doug Marrone and Nathaniel Hackett built the lead that made it a good, interesting game, I thought. Did they blow it? Did they go too conservative? Yeah.
Yeah.
They probably did. If you'd known it was going to work out that way. But, again, we just got done talking about it. He had Bortles at quarterback. He had Blake Bortles. Did he really want to trust him to keep making throws and stay out of trouble? They certainly could have managed clock better, right? Could have used the clock and used more clock. That delay of game penalty and the first half, that's a major problem. Did Doug Marrone blow it? I think that's a little too harsh. And I'm not a Marrone fan. I made that pretty clear late last week.
Let's bring it here. When the caller, not this last caller, but the one before that, alluded to Sean McDermott in the same class as Doug Marrone. But let's just bring it here and talk about the Bills. When they sometimes get conservative, that could have a lot to do with when you have Tyrod Taylor, who is a very limited quarterback. As a coach, we're limited. I really don't know what to call here because I don't have a quarterback that I really want to put this thing on his shoulders. I don't want him to take a sack right here. I don't want him to do certain things. I mean, I feel like that is what coaches are going through. In their minds, they're like, okay, I got this guy at quarterback. We've been successful at this all year. Why would we go away from this to put the game on his shoulders, especially a guy like Blake Bortles, who has been known to throw interceptions?
Mm-hmm.
That's been his bad part about his game is just the interceptions, the interceptions, the interceptions. This year he didn't throw as many, but we all know what he's done in the past, you know? So I don't really blame coaches, but at the same time, at some point, you got to just let it go. Because if you get conservative against a team like the Patriots and you continue to give them the ball back, you get kind of predictable. You give them the ball back, they're going to come back on you.
There's Mike calling from a car. Go ahead, Mike. You're on the air with us.
Hey, guys. How's it going?
Good.
I heard Donald say, well, you guys were bringing up the point the other day about the quarterbacks. Will they get you to a Super Bowl? Here's a stat that I think will kind of silence that. 5 quarterbacks since 2001 have made it from the AFC to the Super Bowl, and those 5 would be Gannon, Flacco, and then the 3, Manning, Brady.
Roethlisberger,
right, yeah. So I think that kind of silences that kind of talk and kind of just shores up the fact that you need an elite quarterback. Hey, I don't think the Eagles are that far outmatched. I think Nick Foles is a good QB who doesn't make too many mistakes. And let's see if the Eagles can give him a shot here.
Yeah, I'm starting to warm up to this Super Bowl, to be honest with you. Maybe just talking a little bit ago to Ruben Frank about what a likable Eagles team that is. And as I said, I'm thinking, well, why wouldn't you root for the Eagles? I'm starting to warm up to this matchup. I don't think it's what did I say, 5.5-point difference in the point spread, which doesn't tell you much other than what the bettors think as far as how to set the odds. But I'm starting to warm up to this matchup a little
bit. You're just trying to psych yourself out a little
bit? Yeah, I'm going to watch the game either way. But we'll get to it in the next 2 weeks. There's a way that the Eagles can win this game. If they get Nick Foles playing quarterback like that.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah. They had a good shot because they got a strong defense and a strong run game. So if he can play like that and maintain it for 4 quarters, then yeah.
All right, we're going to break. When we're back, we'll wrap things up. Maybe a chance to recheck the Twitter poll and check with you again on your takeaways from yesterday's game. Give us a call. It is the John Murphy Show presented by Napa Auto Parts. We're live at One Bills Drive on Buffalo Bills Radio.
This is the John Murphy Show on Buffalo Bills Radio.
And now, what have we learned from today's show?
What have we learned is presented by Advanced Alarm, providing Western New York's homes and businesses with the finest in security and home theater, the preferred alarm and home theater provider of the Buffalo Bills. We had Corey Wire in studio with us in the 1 o'clock hour, the former Bills safety and linebacker, now working with CNN, in town doing a feature with the former Bills quarterback Jim Kelly, a feature that will air on CNN's presentation of a Super Bowl pregame show. Corey Wire talked to us about his upcoming CNN feature.
We do a CNN special every year, a Super Bowl special. It's 30 minutes, and this Super Bowl Sunday is World Cancer Day. And so we wanted to use this angle of Jim Kelly having been to four Super Bowls, one of them being in Minnesota where this year's game will be played. But also, 2017 football season was an incredible year for the power of sport. J.J. Watt raising nearly $40 million for hurricane victims. Colin Kaepernick and all that came positive for that. Athletes becoming socially aware. Right. And here you have Jim Kelly, who, of course, going through what he has gone through with cancer. And we went to we want to share his story and how he is inspiring others and people like him.
Corey Wire talking about his CNN feature. We had Ruben Frank on from NBC Sports in Philadelphia. He talked about Nick Foles, who was leading the Eagles to the Super Bowl. And he talked about that. Hey, tomorrow on the show, we've got Trey Wingo with us from ESPN, and Steve Tasker joins us. Our Twitter poll today dealt with takeaways from yesterday's championship games. Most of you said the biggest takeaway you had is never count out Tom Brady. 41% say Brady's never out of it. 35% say Nick Foles is better than a backup. 14% had something else in mind. 10% said Belichick shows emotion. And that was heartwarming to see that.
It was. I think this year we've seen Bill Belichick. And to be honest, it's before the Super Bowl, you know? Like, he actually got there. Nick Saban the same way. You get to see some emotion from these guys.
We'll have emotion on the show tomorrow, I promise.
You going to cry?
Yes.
All right.
Thanks to our sponsor, Napa Auto Parts. We'll see you tomorrow at 12 noon with the John Murphy Show from One Bills Drive on Buffalo Bills Radio.